about.
So easy. You gotta put it in perspective.
Welcome to Thought for Your Thoughts. I'm your host, Derry Merbles, sitting in for Nina Joplin, who is touring the country performing a spoken word opera about pear-shaped women.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
V.I.G.
I'm too sexable for my shirt. Too sexable for my shirt. Too sexable for my shirt.
I'm bored.
Jesus Christ. You having your red dot special? Communists in your funhouse? Crimson Tide?
Okay, perfect. By all means. Attribute my legitimate feelings of sadness to menses.
You really just say menses.
That's gross.
You're gross.
Great comeback.
And now...
Well, did you know that according to men, women exaggerate everything?
Our feature presentation.
Just morning. Gets better and better.
It's all new Kevin Avicio. It's 5:33 on a Thursday morning.
You don't know, man.
I do know, man.
I think she does.
See, there you are exaggerating again.
I know.
Hey, party people, it is Thursday. Congratulations to the great state of Minnesota. Had one of the Powerball winning lottery tickets sold yesterday.
What was it, New Jersey? 450?
I think it ended up being around 425, maybe? Okay. Something like that. A lot of money.
Not worth it then.
That's why you didn't bother.
450 is where I draw the line.
Yeah.
I hear you. But Minnesota is also in the news for something that I found interesting. They did, like lots of states do, they did a crackdown on speeding. Every once in a while they do a public information campaign. California does it too, where they go, all right, for the next 2 weeks we're going to be out there, we're warning you, we're going to be looking for speeders because it's getting out of control and it's dangerous and blah, blah. And I thought this was interesting. 2 week period, campaign went in July. More than 17,400 speeders were ticketed in the great state of Minnesota during that 2 weeks.
2 weeks, 17,000.
Yep. At least 12 of those thousands of speeders were going faster than 100 miles an hour.
What are they doing in Minnesota? I thought that was like a really calm, laid back.
And where do you have to get that fast in Minnesota?
That's true, too.
I'm not sure why you guys think Minnesota is that different than most other states. I mean, it has big cities. It also has country. It has, you know, a little bit of everything, just like California does.
Seems calmer.
The home of NPR, that's why.
Oh, at least it listens to NPR.
12 of them going faster than 100. The record for the two-week period is your hero, Kevin. His name is Richard Bernhagen. He is 41 years old. He was cited going 148 miles per hour.
Wow. Was he on a motorcycle?
Nope, he was in a car. In fact, he was in a 2001 Ford Mustang GT.
Wow.
We have learned from working on this show that everyone who drives a Ford Mustang is a dick. But he was going 148 miles an hour, which is just about 90 miles over the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit.
Wow.
His excuse was he told troopers that he hadn't driven the car in a while and was airing it out.
Right. You got to get the cobwebs out.
Now, I don't know anything about cars. But is there something to car? I mean, obviously, you know, there's no need to ever drive it that fast. But is there something to, if cars have been sitting for a while, you're supposed to drive it super fast just to kind of clear out the lines or anything? Is that a thing?
I don't think it is really. I could be completely wrong. I'm not a car guy either. But
yeah. I've heard you should put it on the freeway every once in a while instead of just street driving. That's good for your car. But
Dave,
that's it.
Dave, tell us that on the air. Ralph gave us the answer.
It's to blow the carbons off the pistons.
To blow the carbons off the pistons. Are we still talking about driving a car?
And according to Ralph, how fast do you need to go to make that happen? Are you supposed to be over 140, or can you get the job done for less?
Ralph's coming in to explain more.
All right, good.
Oh, good. Okay. Ralph's the man. 148. By the way, in case you're wondering, in Minnesota, you can lose your license for 6 months if you are ticketed driving faster than 100 miles an hour.
I think a lot of places are really harsh when it's over 100 miles an hour. Yes, Ralph.
I don't mean to interrupt your gardening club, ladies, but yeah,
we admitted this isn't our area.
You got to blow the carbon off the pistons once in a while, especially if it's been sitting around. You got to open it up and just work it out.
130 won't do it.
Yeah, 130, 135, whatever it takes.
So there is
ideally
a,
you want to rev it up. You want to pin it. You want to get into that red zone. You know, for a little extended period of time, just to, as I said, blow the carb.
So there's a physical reason to actually do it for the health of the car.
Especially for like a Mustang, something okay. like that, like a muscle car or high performance.
Is it
car.
True that everybody that drives a Mustang is a dick?
No, that would be Mini Coopers.
Oh, Mini Coopers. Yeah, <okay. laughs>
Ralph, are you surprised that a 2001 Ford Mustang can go 148 miles an hour?
No, not a GT.
How fast do they go?
If you redline it, you could probably get 150, 155.
Wow. So this guy was really kind of playing it a little on the low side.
But 2001, maybe that was the best he could do. But he had it opened up. And look, it's Minnesota. What are you going to hit?
A right, moose? That's the point.
What's the worst that can happen? You hit a moose.
What's the fastest you've ever gotten yours up to, Ralph?
Allegedly. Theoretically?
Yeah.
My current Mustang, I've got it up to...
The yellow one.
The orange one.
The banana mobile.
The orange Mustang I drive. I've got up to about 130.
130?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. For a very short period of time, obviously.
Out of your driveway?
Yeah. Actually going into the garage, which was a bad idea, it turns out.
All right. Well, thank you for the information, Mr. Science. We appreciate that.
You're welcome. Girls, get back to your knitting.
And congratulations to Richard Bernhagen, 41, Kevin Amin, Citizen of the Day, for driving 148 in a 55.
So there is a reason. In a 55, too, not a 75?
Right.
Oh, man. I mean, I guess it doesn't make any difference, but let's talk about today's Kevin Amin show, shall we?
Whoa! Whoa! Ho, ho! Let's not go nuts!
We have a pretty packed show. We have Richard Flood coming in. He stars in Crossing Lines, one of my favorite new shows.
That's not a show.
It's a show.
That sounds like something that's on the Lisa News Network.
It's a show. It's a good show. And there's a hot actress that we need to have Richard Flood in. We need this to go well so that we can get her.
Okay.
Oh, we're just priming the pump.
Yes.
We're just pretending to be interested in Mr. Flood so we can get Miss Hottie in.
Yeah, I don't care about him. But we do have to get her in. We have Dr. Drew on the program today.
Fantastic.
We have John Gallagher Jr. You would probably know him from The Newsroom if you watched that on HBO.
He's Jim.
He is.
Love him.
Jim. He's fantastic.
Great.
And he's in a brand new movie called Short Term 12. We have tickets for Kick-Ass 2, another game for you. That's coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. And we also have some live music today from Lord.
Oh, how
Lord
cool.
is going to be in the studio. She's 2.5. Years old. And
I think she might be 16. I think she's actually 16. It's
16.
What she is,
yeah. That's what I meant. She's going to be in the studio and she's going to be performing live as well today. So we will take a break and come back with the Showbiz Beat now. 106.7 K Rock is KROQ and you are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 5:53. That is how
sure.
that ends.
Love that.
Comedian Adam Ray with a hilarious story about walking in on his roommate's private time. That's coming up next right after the top of the hour here on the Kevin Amin Show. First, though, Ralph's got the Showbiz Beat on a Thursday.
Tragic news coming out of Florida.
What?
There's sickness in the Honey Boo Boo family. Mike Sugar Bear Thompson from Here Comes Honey Boo Boo is battling a mystery illness. Mama June revealed it on Honey Boo Boo's Facebook page. That he's undergoing a series of tests at the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida, because he's had a series of dizzy spells that began on Memorial Day weekend and have not let up yet. If you are the doctor to any of the Honey Boo Boo family, where do you freaking start?
Good question.
Can you imagine they show up and you go, all right, that's your diet? That's how you live? And there's chicken poop on your floor? And, oh, my God, the list of potential illnesses must go on like one of those comedy scrolls when somebody just rolls across the floor. It's just they could have anything. They could have what Kevin has right now.
No. I'm good.
How do you start to eliminate the possibilities?
I don't know.
Live in a pretty toxic environment.
I'm a little dizzy. Well, stop eating only cheese balls and living in a house full of chicken poop.
Her favorite foods are sketty and butter.
Well, you start with diabetes. You don't even run the tests for diabetes, right?
You just start treating him.
Treating him, right, exactly. But then you're right. All the other problems they've got.
You got tractor foot, whatever the hell she's got.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
There's all kinds of just oddities, just physical oddities there in that family.
I think you just send them home. They come into the doctor's office.
It's too late.
Go, you know what?
I'm not a magician.
I'm out.
Yeah. Will somebody please step up and buy the Ferris Bueller house in Chicago, please?
It's what? A cool house.
Are they unable to cool unload house. It? What's
they
going
can't
on?
Unload it, yeah. Sellers initially wanted $2.3 million back in 2009 before they took it off the market. Now they're selling it for a mere $1.5 million. This is the famous house where they killed the car, remember?
Yeah.
They put
right.
on blocks and they go backwards and then it slips off and shoots into the
that
backyard.
That was one of the funniest scenes because then they wait and break up laughing like
yeah,
crazy.
Genius. Yeah, apparently Chicago Magazine says they're trying to sell this famous house, but nobody wants to buy it. One of the biggest problems? What do you think is one of the biggest problems?
Well, I would think it's tourists going by in front of the house all the time.
Fans who want to visit the house.
Okay, still.
Yep.
You're paying the butt.
Wow.
So people still clog up the street, parking and taking pictures. We're roaming the property.
Really?
Looking for a better look, trying to get in the backyard, trying to get shots from their one of their favorite movies. So that's why nobody wants it, apparently. By the way, the government is selling some lighthouses. I just saw this in this real estate story next to the Ferris Bueller thing. Selling lighthouses. Wouldn't that be great for Bean?
Totally. Bean don't think I haven't already looked into it.
Just
he's
buy,
already looked into
buy
it.
Himself a small little island in the middle of the ocean and nobody else around.
He just sit up there on top of it.
There aren't many of them anymore. They come up for sale pretty infrequently. And a lot of times you have to agree to continue to maintain them to a certain level in order to. That's part of the deal with having a lease on the place.
Right, but Ralph's suggesting you move there.
The government right now is auctioning off two different lighthouses.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I mean, they do come up. Not very often. There aren't very many of them anymore. But I've looked at several of them. I think it's awesome.
I think you should go there.
Who's I would love it.
Several lighthouses to buy.
The Saybrook Breakwater Lighthouse is in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And the Graves Island Lighthouse is off the coast of Boston.
I get concerned that it's a lot of stairs for the dogs, though.
Yeah, well, you kill the dogs. That's the first step.
Wow.
Right?
This turned ugly.
I know.
Quickly.
I don't know what happened. It's not even six and the dogs are dead.
It's best to get them early in the morning, Lisa. They don't put up much of a fight that way.
It's going to be a long show today. Wow.
Well, it seemed obvious to me. First to kill the dogs,
so
right?
Interesting.
Well,
I don't think that was any of our instincts.
No? You didn't go to that right away?
No.
Why solve that problem then?
Well, you move into a house that doesn't have super steep stairs that your dogs have to climb on.
Doesn't seem like a good option.
I was more fascinated by the fact that Bean actually considered it so much that he had gotten to the point of his dogs not being able to climb the stairs.
First, I'll have to build a dog elevator.
And Lamar Odom. Sounds like he has been a very busy guy. Star Magazine has an interview with a woman named Polina Polanski who claims she had a 6-week affair with the husband of Khloe Kardashian, even passed a polygraph test regarding this story. Said she met him on June the 2nd at the Roosevelt Hotel when he'd been living there for a week. Apparently, he had had a falling out with Khloe and he moved into the Roosevelt down there in Hollywood. They apparently became quite close. Khloe found out, showed up at the hotel with her mom, Kris Jenner, and broke down the door.
I will break this house down.
That's by Khloe.
You're Khloe again. The problem was, it was the wrong room.
Oops.
Oh, no.
Khloe broke down the door to the wrong room initially. Then she broke down the right door. Then Lamar moved in with Polina at her place. And
wait, this all happened this past June.
Yes.
Huh.
And we didn't hear anything about
Khloe
this.
And Kris showed up at her apartment when Lamar was staying there, and Lamar refused to answer. Now, this is not your average fame-chasing wannabe starlet whore. This woman has a lucrative career as an attorney. She's got a real life and everything, this woman. So they're saying her her story seems more than legitimate.
So are they apart?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Are they still together? Or
Khloe
Lamar's
and Lamar
back with
are
Khloe?
Still together. In fact, there was a paparazzo who asked Lamar about the about an affair, not this affair, but there had been stories that he had been cheating. And did you see the story where Lamar went nuts and grabbed his camera mm-hmm. and went crazy and stole it and everything? So he's
we
very sensitive about it.
Basketball players, come on.
Look, they're in the NBA.
Gotta know.
Look, I'm just saying, anything that causes pain to anyone in that family, I'm all for. So I support
I like she
this.
Drags her mom around with her.
Mom, he's cheating on me.
We'll go get him, honey.
We could make a TV show about bring the cameras.
Khloe puts Kris in her pocket and they just walk out. Today's celebrity birthdays. Born today, August the 8th. Actress Megan Good. She is 32 years old today. Actress,
she is.
Yeah, Lindsay Sloan, 36 years old today. Another hottie. The Edge of U2 is 52 years old today. Cool Moe Dee.
51 years old. Scott Stapp of Creed is 40. Tom Linton, guitarist for Jimmy Eat World, 38 years old. Actor Keith Carradine is 64. Larry Wilcox, you remember him from Chips.
He was
John.
He was the other one.
He was the other guy.
He was not Ponch. He was John.
Right.
He was Ponch's John. And Dustin Hoffman celebrates his 76th birthday today.
Wow.
He looks really good for 76.
No kidding. He does.
But he always looked young. Even when he was doing the Graduate, the movie that sort of made him a star, he was playing a 21-year-old, and he was 31 years old at the time. So yeah. He's always been a young-looking guy. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
You know, we all have to watch and listen to a certain amount of commercials. That's just life.
Yep.
If you're watching TV, you got to watch commercials. If you're listening to the radio, I mean, that's what pays for everything. And occasionally something will come along that really is entertaining as well.
And this very rarely.
Very rarely, right. The Bud Light one comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Real Men of, what is it, Real Heroes? I can't remember the name of it, but.
Real American Real Heroes.
Yeah. But this one is for DirecTV's Red Zone. And this is Peyton Manning and Eli Manning. And they're brothers, of course, and quarterbacks in the NFL. And they are, well, they're rapping. They're rapping for DirecTV because you can now watch football on your phone.
It's football on your phone. It's football on your phone. Wow.
It's football on your phone. That's what I said.
It's football on your phone. You can watch it in bed.
Take it with you wherever you go.
Show your friends and watch them all go home.
It's football on your phone.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's football on your phone. Wow.
It's football on your phone. So now is your chance
to have football on your phone and football in your pants.
By the way, I'm not positive. You know, Peyton is usually the one that has the best sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
I'm not positive that Eli doesn't do a little better on this song than
Peyton. Look at this guy using his phone as a phone.
Your phone ain't for calling.
Your phone's for football.
It's football on your phone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's football on your phone. Wow.
Let me ask you a question. What do you get when a football gets down with your phone?
It's football on your phone.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's football on your phone.
They both do a great job with this, by the way. They both show great sense of humor. They're both terrible rappers. And it's hilarious because it really does look like a Lonely Island video in that, you know, they've got like the Justin Timberlake wigs on and everything. And they're wearing the 80s clothing and the way it's shot with all the girls dancing and everything. Like that, it's very clever.
It's funny.
Get out of small loans.
Football in your phone.
When you're sitting on your throne.
Football in your phone.
When you're buttering a scone.
Football in
your phone.
Here's
my favorite part.
It's like I spilled milk all over your blouse by accident or on purpose. It's like the milk is like football and your blouse is the phone.
Okay.
It's absurd.
It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. But the fact that it's NFL quarterbacks rapping is just awesome.
Exactly. Cool. You think you win the Super Bowl, you don't have to do stuff like this anymore. But the Mannings have a great sense of humor. And of course, you know, we love our Eli. And we haven't talked to him since the season ended last year. So we're very excited to welcome Eli Manning, quarterback for the New York Giants, back to the Kevin and Bean Show today. Hi, Eli.
Hi.
How you doing,
Hi,
buddy?
Hi, I'm Eli.
You are Eli. Congratulations.
Hi.
We were just talking about you and your brother rapping in this commercial for DirecTV.
Yeah, football on your phone.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good program DirecTV has.
You can watch it on your phone.
All right, we know. We understand the concept.
You don't understand. You can watch football on your phone.
Right.
Right. You get the Red Zone, and you're able to watch the shows on TV or on your phone or on your tablet, and you guys did a funny commercial where you
I'm
and your brother were rapping.
Love, and I'm not hating, but I'm a better rapper than my brother, Peyton.
Wow. Nice.
Yay!
Make that one up, Eli.
Look at
that.
This is not going to be... All right. You might be too happy. This is not going to be a career change, is it?
I don't know. For a white guy, I'm pretty fly. I go to my friends and say, hi, I'm Eli.
Okay, but you don't have to rap anymore, Eli, because that was really just for the commercial. Now you can just talk like a regular white person.
I can talk like rap or I can talk like white. I could do either because I'm a mouth breather. Yay!
You can see the video at krock.com, kevinandbean.com. We did post it. We tweeted it out. And it's you and your brother. And I got to say again, you may have upstaged your brother for the first time.
Yay!
Nicely done.
I hate him so much.
No, you don't hate him.
A lot of people think I took a blow to the dome, but in fact, I just got a damaged chromosome. Yay!
Well, Eli, we're going to let you get back to practice. We just wanted to congratulate you and say how good it was to see you back on our TVs in this commercial.
Hi, I'm Eli.
Yeah, we started that way.
You can watch football on your phone.
Right.
Isn't that something?
So, have you seen Kick-Ass 2 yet, Ralph?
No. I want to. I want to have seen it.
Doesn't how annoyed Ralph
is. Annoyed.
Are you concerned by Jim Carrey being in the movie?
No, I think his performance looks great. Look, he is to this film what Nicolas Cage was in the first one, which is an over-the-top sort of manic performance, and it's grounded by the rest of the cast, which is just terrific. You got Chloe Moretz, of course, as Hit Girl. You've got Kick-Ass. You've got the Mother Effer, who returns. Christopher Mintz-Plasse comes back this time.
And I love the first one.
Boy, I did too. And I loved the comics, and the Kick-Ass 2 comic series was terrific, and it looks like this film really follows it closely, so I can't wait to see this movie.
Well, after the contest we played this week, I'm terrified to ask, how are we giving away tickets? We have your contestant standing by.
What did we do Monday?
Monday we did Teen Heroes, because Kick-Ass is a teenager. We did Teen Heroes.
Okay, and then Tuesday?
Tuesday we did Green Heroes, because Kick-Ass wears a green costume, so we did all the heroes with Green Heroes.
And then yesterday?
We did Mean Heroes, anti-hero superheroes who sort of have a bad attitude. They were mean heroes.
And then today?
Well, Kick-Ass, of course, features Hit Girl,
right,
which everybody loves. Hit Girl, the female little girl superhero. So we thought we'd give a tribute to all female superheroes today with the Queen Heroes.
Kevin and me. Okay, but do we have to sit through the whole...
Hush, shush.
And you.
And you.
Yeah.
You guess the Queen.
The Queen. See, they're female heroes. The Queen Heroes.
For tickets to see Kick-Ass 2.
All right, let's get to the call.
You can win them.
How can I win them, Omar?
Just if you play.
For playing, all right.
This is Queen Heroes.
Queen Heroes.
Now it's time to play.
Our superhero queens, the female superheroes, Queen Heroes. This
all right.
is Queen Heroes.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying it's Queen Heroes.
This is Queen Heroes!
All right, Kevin, who's our first contestant? Let's play the game.
Edgar is our first contestant. Hi, Edgar.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
We are good.
Good, Edgar. Here is your question for your female superhero. This female superhero has been associated with the Thunderbolts, S.H.I.E.L.D., the Champions, the Defenders, and the Avengers.
Black Widow?
Black Widow is correct,
Nicely
sir.
Done.
Well done.
You win tickets. We have enough tickets to give away, right?
No, we have five pairs. Right. The first five correct answers win tickets.
Your comic book peeps have really come through this week, by the way, Ralph.
Yeah, they've really, for the
Impressive.
Most part, have had the answers.
Let's go to Matt. Hello, Matt.
Hey,
Matt. This queen hero is royalty in her home of Themyscira.
Is that Wonder Woman?
Wonder Woman is correct, sir. Well
two
done.
Two.
Themyscira, of course, another name for Paradise Island.
I would be zero for all this week.
That's what I.
All right, let's go to Alex. Hi, Alex.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Alex. Jennifer Walters received an emergency blood transfusion from her cousin, which led her to acquire a milder version of his condition.
What?
She-Hulk.
She-Hulk. That's right.
Wow.
She's the She-Hulk.
Three for three in Queen Heroes.
This is Queen Heroes.
See, she's the She-Hulk, Kevin. She got blood from Bruce Banner, and that made her green and powerful as well. And
how many times did the
giant
the
hands on the She-Hulk? By the way,
oh
giant
really?
Hands, yeah.
It'd have to be right. How many times did She-Hulk appear, Ralph? I've never heard of her.
She's in the comics currently. She's got her own book.
Really?
Been around forever. Bean,
get with it, man.
Forever.
Wow. She know anything?
Okay. She-Hulk.
All right, let's go to a girl on the phone. Oh, it's Raul. Sorry.
Stop it.
Hello, Raul.
Not cool, guys.
Not cool, indeed. Well said, Raul. All right, here's your question. The daughter of a police commissioner, this librarian adopted the costume of a male superhero she admired.
That would be Batgirl.
That would be Batgirl.
That would be Batgirl.
Correct, sir.
Four for four.
Four for four.
Wow.
All right, but clearly because there's a woman up next.
Stop
this
it.
This is going to break the streak,
right? Unless Julio is a woman. No, that's not the case. Hello, Julio.
Hello.
Oh, hi, guys.
He's Julia. See?
It's Julia. Who knew?
Hi, guys. What's up, guys? How's it going?
We're doing Queen Heroes.
This is Queen Heroes.
This is our last pair. We're 4-for-4 so far. See if you can make us proud, Julio. Here's your question. This Queen Hero is an exceptional martial artist. She's an expert motorcycle rider, but her biggest weapon is her ultrasonic scream.
That would be the Black Canary.
Black Canary is correct, sir.
Boom. What just happened?
Boom.
Ralph is making up questions with imaginary answers, and the listeners somehow telepathically are able to figure out what it is.
That was
Come
five
on, you know
for
Black
five.
Canary. Everybody knows Black Canary.
I've never heard
what the
of
hell
Black
is
Canary.
A Black Canary? She is a smoking hot superhero, has an ultrasonic scream.
Does she have giant cans, too?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They all do.
God bless them.
Well, there you go. We gave all five pair away. With our Queen Heroes.
This is Queen Heroes. And I'm glad you played.
What a show we have for you today here on the Kevin Amin program, including actor John Gallagher Jr. He is Jim on The Newsroom on HBO. He joins us in the next half hour. Also, live music from Lord in the 8 o'clock hour. Dr. Drew will be here. And Kevin from your favorite show on NBC, Crossing Lines, actor Richard Flood in the 9 o'clock hour.
Love it.
A lot of show coming up. Ralph is here now. Time for the Showbiz Beat on a Thursday morning.
John's new film, Short Term 12. Have you seen the trailer for
that? I have.
Movie?
It looks
fantastic. Whew, looks like a rough show.
It does.
Looks weepy.
Yeah.
It's good, though.
You know, it's a funny thing, what happens once you become a parent. Everything that has, anything that happens in the media that has to do with kids, where kids struggle or have a hard time or get hurt or whatever, just devastating.
Yeah, you're a mess.
Yeah. So this Short Term 12 just looks like a, as I call it, a matinee film. I have to come out of that film and the sun has to be shining or else I might just cut myself. I might just go home and start cutting. Between that and the newsroom, speaking of bad things happening to kids, Jesus.
Yeah, true.
Can't watch either of his projects these days.
Why does John Gallagher hate kids so much?
That's
our first question.
We'll have to find out. All right, let's talk about somebody else that everybody hates. The Bieber. Justin Bieber in the news again.
He can't still be a thing, Ralph.
He is still a thing. And now other celebrities are speaking out against him. Mark Wahlberg did a very funny interview with the London Sun newspaper where he talked about the little bastard, as he called him.
Awesome.
Bieber's a little bastard. He needs to be a nice boy. This is the advice he would give him if he could talk to him. Be a nice boy, pull your pants up, make your mom proud, and stop smoking weed. That would be his advice to Bieber.
When did Mark Wahlberg become the man?
He's not the man. He just knows how to live his life. Look. He was where Bieber was when he came out with the Funky Bunch.
That's
right?
True.
He was the flavor of the month.
He was funky.
He was in the white hot spotlight, and he was
to with his pants down and getting into trouble,
being a douchebag. So he knows what he's talking about. Yeah, Mark says, by the way, he had been to prison already before he hit the big time with the Funky Bunch.
Oh, no kidding!
That sort of helped him maintain his composure because he didn't want to go back there again. So
Bieber would be sweet in prison. Wouldn't
he?
He
would be so popular.
He really would be.
Yeah. Farrah Abraham, the backdoor teen mom from MTV, she's in the news. She says she's got big plans for her future.
Okay.
She's working on a new TV series called Finding Farrah, her reality show where she finds herself.
Okay.
I bet she finds herself on all fours. That's where she finds herself. She's writing a novel. Writing a novel?
Oh, my God.
That's not happening.
I don't think she can read a novel, let alone write one.
Agreed.
And this will make us all feel good. She is joining our profession.
She's becoming a radio?
Farrah just got her own radio show.
Is that right?
It's going to be on Sirius XM. She's going to be on the satellite radio.
What if she does so much better than us? Wouldn't that be a bummer?
I get the sense if we take Kevin and we play it right up against Farrah Abraham, it'll be like a duel.
That cuts.
Man. I'm just
that
saying.
Hurts. That's painful.
Money's unfair. I don't think it's even close.
That hurts. I'm a human being with feelings. All right, I'm a human being.
Eve W. Ladbet.
Hey, Ralph, doesn't Farrah Abramson still have Front Door Teen Mom ahead of her? That still hasn't happened, right?
Well, it did happen all in the same film.
Oh, it did. Yeah. I didn't see it.
Backdoor Teen Mom, sort of the climax of the film, if you were.
All right, so they covered
her unlocking
everything.
The back door.
They covered it all.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The only thing she hasn't done, I think Garage Door Teen Mom, I think, is the only thing she hasn't done yet.
Well, she needs more stretching exercises before
she needs more doors. That's what she needs. Let's, Lindsay Lohan. I was hearing such good news about her, and now the bad news is starting to come out.
Oh, what? No.
Well, apparently she had a rough time inside Cliffside Malibu Recovery Center.
Right.
apparently, maybe initially this story comes from when she initially checked in. Because by all accounts, she came out just on top of her game. And I hope she stays clean and sober. But one of her fellow patients had a run-in with Lindsay that was so bad she had to leave. That patient's name was Chaka Khan.
Wow.
Chaka Khan was getting treatment the same time Lindsay was.
Why do I know that name? What song?
Chaka Khan. Chaka Khan.
Oh, yeah.
She had 80s? A bunch of hits in 1980s? The 70s. Late 70s, early 80s, I guess. What was her biggest hit, Bean?
I Feel For You probably was her biggest, but I'm Every Woman is another one Kevin would know. And, sure. Of course, all those hits with Rufus, like Ain't Nobody, things like that.
She had a big yelling match with Lindsay, apparently. Didn't appreciate the things she claimed Lindsay was doing for attention. So they got into a big screaming match, and she checked out a week early because she couldn't cope.
Chaka Khan did?
Chaka Khan. Chaka Khan. Yeah.
Is that the counselor looking for her in the morning? She left.
And Andy Dick has reportedly taken a flying leap off the wagon.
Oh, no. That makes me sad.
Me too.
His wagon is very high. He can fall very far.
Radar Online reports that friends and family attempted an intervention last week and took him to a treatment center, but he left almost immediately once he got inside. This is like the 13th facility Andy has been in. And
Andy was in when he was on Dancing with the Stars and could not have seemed in a better place.
He seemed like really tight. But look, as anyone will tell you who goes through a treatment program, it's a slippery precipice you're standing on when you're dealing with that.
Yep.
And here's some good news to wash all that stuff out of your mind. Pee-wee Herman's coming back to television.
What?
How about that?
What about Postman Mike?
He's coming back, too.
All right. Oh,
man. In an interview.
Whatever.
Interview with the LA Times, Paul Rubin said Pee-wee's coming back to television with a brand new show scheduled for next year, 2014. And there is another Pee-wee movie in the works as well. So we're going to get a lot of Pee-wee in the next couple years. Paul Rubin's, by the way, 60 years old.
Wow.
He still looks like Pee-wee.
And I'll tell you, when he puts the makeup on and everything, he still looks like him. Yeah. He's still got it. I saw the live show when he did it down at LA Live.
Oh, right, you went.
It was uncanny. I mean, it's just, time stood still. It was amazing. All right, we get it. Pee-wee Herman. Today's celebrity birthday is born today, August the 8th. Dustin Hoffman is 76 years old today. Another guy who doesn't age. Larry Wilcox is 66. Keith Carradine, 64 years old. The Edge from U2 is 52. Kumo D is 51 years old. Ricky Rocket, drummer for Poison, is 52 years old. Scott Stapp of Creed turns 40. Tom Linton, guitarist for Jimmy Eat World, is 38 years old. Actress Lindsay Sloan turns 36. And Megan Good? She certainly is. See what I did there? Anyone?
Because her last name is Good.
This thing on?
And then you.
She's 32. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
I didn't get it.
It's that guy from that show, Kevin, right there in the studio.
Could you be more specific?
John Gallagher Jr., ladies and gentlemen, one of the stars of The Newsroom on HBO and the upcoming movie Short Term 12. Hey, John, how are you, my friend?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Do we have to introduce you as Tony Award winner John Gallagher Jr.? Because I think I would insist on that if I had won a major award in a major event like that.
It's number one in my contract. Everybody knows it.
Fantastic. Sorry about that. We blew it.
No.
Lisa,
way.
Did you see Spring Awakening?
Yes, I love it. That's one of my favorite musicals of all time.
Oh, cool.
It just killed me, that show.
Was John in it when you saw it?
Did you do it in L.A.?
I didn't do it in L.A., but...
No.
But a very good actor did it in Los Angeles.
So you did it in New York.
I did, yeah.
Oh, God, it's such an amazing show.
Yeah, it was a special time. It was a really cool experience.
That's awesome.
Well, John, we're so excited to have you. And like many people, we have been obsessed with The Newsroom since it came on. I mean, it's such an addictive show. And I can't even imagine, I mean, as an actor, and you've done a lot of things, as an actor having to do Aaron Sorkin's words must be both a thrill and an honor and just terrifying.
Yeah, exactly. That sums it up perfectly. It's a really special thing to be able to do as an actor, but the pressure that you just put on yourself about wanting to make sure that it's good and that you get it right and that you do, like, you know, such lovely writing justice is kind of, that's part of the daily grind when you're memorizing it is, you know, that you're putting that extra little bit of expectation on it of, oh my God.
Aaron Sorkin is, for those of you who don't recognize the name, is the guy who did, it was Sports Night, was that the name?
Yes,
and then West Wing, and he just writes brilliant, he writes
like
social network.
We all wish we could talk.
Exactly.
I wish I could talk like that, and I'm the opposite of that.
Right. No, totally. I wish that I should have made him write me a script for the interview so that I would come in here and just dazzle you all with my intellect and my wit.
Now, there must be hundreds of hours of blooper reels on a show like yours because there's no way you get through most of those scenes in one take. And I would imagine that you're 2 minutes into some of those long set pieces and somebody screws up and everybody has to start over again, and you must start throwing fruit at whoever screwed it up.
Everyone is very supportive of each other. Like all the other actors, we all know how intense that workload
is.
It's
the same pressure. You one time.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes it is, and you do feel really bad if you're the one that's coming up the works. But we do, at the end of both seasons, they showed us a pretty spectacular blooper reel at the rap party.
Now, season one is not out on DVD yet, right?
I think it just came out on DVD.
Oh, good. Okay. And do they put the bloopers on there?
I don't think so. I think they wanted to leave that best, you know, that was best left to the imagination of our viewers.
How much is Mr. Sorkin around?
He's around all the time. His office is on the lot where we shoot. So he'll come down when we're shooting scenes, but then he's constantly going back and forth between the set and into his office where he's constantly writing.
Does he change stuff, you know, spur of the moment?
You know, it doesn't really change last minute. Usually whatever draft of the script that we'll get before we go into shooting is the one that we'll use. He might do little tweaks and little corrections here and there, but usually nothing major changes once we're shooting.
God.
I know, thank goodness.
Does he look after a scene, does he look at you and go, no,
I'm not good. You're out of here.
That's
go.
Not what I planned.
Why was the decision made? I don't think I've ever read this anywhere, John, to set the newsroom in the past, like about a year.
Yeah, I think the idea was to be able to have a kind of immediacy of using, you know, events that have happened in the real world that people maybe are just forgetting, and to kind of reignite and have people remember that, you know, that part of, that moments of our history that have just passed are worth also remembering and putting into context. But it was also a way of having things to kind of put up as a backdrop for whatever the characters are dealing with in their personal life. So all the news events that get picked from, you know, from real life in the last few years usually are picked very carefully because they have to somehow affect the characters and whatever is happening in their development at any moment.
It's also interesting to see some of those events through a different, you know, viewpoint. Mm-hmm. You didn't experience, you know, that the first time, but you look it through your guys' eyes and it's very different.
Yeah, and Aaron, I think, is really, really good about picking an angle or a perspective about some news stories that maybe you didn't hear on the news.
Your character, Jim, seems to have the hots for Maggie. And we talk about this all the time because, like I say, we're all huge fans of the show. And every week you come in and go, what does anyone see in Maggie? Now, I think the actress is terrific, but she's a mess. She is just a disaster.
I think they're kind of the same person on the inside, Jim and Maggie. I think they're kind of soulmates in a way that they recognize, like, oh, right, I think this is – we are versions. We are, you know, the male and female kind of equivalents of each other. Jim maybe puts on a better front, but it says it all in the pilot. I walk on camera and immediately trip and fall over.
And she, of course, has a boyfriend, and that's
– Yeah, it's a little complicated
things
right
up
now.
A bit.
Yeah, things are – the love triangle, you know, is a tricky situation, and it's turning into like a rectangle now.
That's true.
It's one of the things that's crazy. I mean, look, the star of every Aaron Sorkin movie or TV show is the script. I mean, there's no question that's the big reason you draw. But there are so many terrific performers and so many great actors on this show and so many actors on this show. I mean, there are scenes where you have 20 people with speaking parts.
Yeah.
It just must be incredibly difficult to film.
Yeah, the conference room scenes, you know, we have a lot of scenes in the conference room where that's where they kind of pack everybody in for the content meetings. And they can get a bit tedious because especially when you're around a table, you have to do a lot of coverage. You have to shoot it from a lot of different angles. So you'll be in there, you know, for, we call it the fishbowl because it has these, you know, glass doors that we're stuck in the middle of this of this set, but you know, those days are definitely intense. It requires a lot of, a good sense of humor and a lot of patience.
Right. Do you guys ever, is politics something that the actors care about or talk about on the set? Does it ever rub anybody the wrong way with what's going on in the script versus how they feel personally?
You know, that's nothing I've ever noticed. I think there's, for one thing, there's never really any time. You know, I think...
couldn't argue if you wanted to.
Yeah, precisely. But I think, you know, there's a sensitivity that comes into play on set, both with, you know, with Aaron and everyone else, that, you know, I think everyone knows that less than kind of like having a message to deliver, that everybody really knows where their character is coming from, and everybody's very fearless and jumping into that.
It's sort of the script, the way he writes it, is sort of right on the edge of making political points anyway.
Yeah, it's always been...
It's really well done that way.
Yeah, all of his writing has always been... I think he frames debates in a really great way. You know, there's some great... You know, you'll have kind of people on the show that might have differing viewpoints, and he makes these amazing cases for each... You know, each
both
stance.
Are valid, right?
Yeah, precisely.
He would have been a great attorney, Aaron Sorkin, wouldn't he?
Yeah,
I feel like he could sell me anything. Like, he could argue any point. And before we take a break, this is actor John Gallagher in the studio with us here on the Kevin DeBean Show. We're talking about The Newsroom, which is Sunday nights on HBO. And when we come back, we're going to talk about his amazing film called Short Term 12 that's getting ready to come out, too. The incredible thing, the casting on this show, I mean, Sam Waterston, first of all, is such a joy to watch.
Yeah, he's amazing.
I literally rewind his scene sometimes and watch it because he's so entertaining.
Yeah.
Dev Patel is so great on that show. Mm-hmm. Emily Mortimer is so great. You got the Dumb and Dumber guy playing your news anchor. Yeah. That was a curious choice.
Yeah.
What's it like with Jeff Daniels?
Oh, it's great. Jeff's amazing.
Is he?
Yeah, he's incredible. I mean, he really sets the bar really, really high for us, because, you know, he is our leader. And you know, every time I feel like I have a ton of dialogue to learn, I just take a look at his lines in the script.
Right.
And it's you know, my moments will seem like a fraction in comparison, and you'll never catch him complaining. You never catch him messing up. But, you know, he's always just on top of it. He comes into work with all of it there.
Wow. That puts a lot of pressure on everybody else, right?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, between him and, you know, someone like Sam, who's such a stalwart, who's been at it for such a long time, they're just, you know, they inspire all of us, I think, to make sure that we can come in and deliver.
Have you seen the YouTube that somebody put together of all the yelling on the newsroom?
Yeah, I did. Someone sent that to me.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Just yelling. Every scene where somebody's yelling, they edited it together. It's so great.
I didn't realize that there was so much yelling. They
now,
sent me that clip.
We're going to take a break and come back, but we have to ask you this, because we saw the previews for next week's show, and it looks like Sloane, played by Olivia Munn on the show, it looks like there may be naked pictures of her. Tell me that really happens on next week's show.
Things get a little scandalous.
Okay. I'm in.
I think it's a yes.
Are we the viewer part of that scandal, or do we just have to watch you be part of that scandal?
I guess you'll just have to tune in.
Come on!
And find out.
Boom!
The Newsroom, Sunday nights on HBO. John Gallagher is here. We'll take a break. Come back with more on The Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock.
K-Rock. The Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock.
It is 23 minutes after 7 o'clock. John Gallagher Jr. is in our studios. He, of course, is in The Newsroom. And until... we were pitched you and you were coming in, I had never heard of Short Term 12.
Yeah.
And the trailer looks awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people have come up and said, you know, I can't wait to see Short Term 12. The trailer alone had me welling up. You know?
Yeah. Tell us about
why
the movie.
Why do you hate kids, John?
They're just so small. Short Term 12 is a movie that I shot last year, and it takes place inside a foster care facility for at-risk youth. And Brie Larson stars in it. She plays one of the line staff members, counselors, and I play her boyfriend and also another line staff member. And we look after these kids, and it was made very, very modestly and did really, really well at South by Southwest. We won the Grand Jury Prize and the Audience Award.
Wow.
And
strong.
Yeah, and so that was our premiere in March in Austin at that festival. And
is that a surreal thing? You know, everybody goes.
Absolutely.
Everybody goes, everybody tries to get their movie shown. Is it crazy when you get that kind
of
response?
It is. It really is, because when you make an independent film, you have no idea where it's going to go. It might be on a shelf for years, or you might be one of the lucky ones that breaks through and shines. And South by Southwest really embraced the movie. It was amazing going to those early screenings and seeing how people were responding to it. Because it is, it's a very intimate and very, very simple story. Really, really emotional, really heartfelt, and very, very hopeful. And so, it's crazy. I didn't even know there were awards when I went.
Is that right?
I had no idea.
I thought we won an award.
I thought everybody was just going to hang out and have some barbecue and watch movies. And then, you know, towards the end, the producers were like, hey, you know, the awards are tonight. And I thought, like, what awards? You know, so we went and we won. It was really incredible.
And most of the reason you take a movie to a festival is to sell it, right? Isn't that what most festivals are for?
Yeah, to try
to get picked up for distribution.
Most, you know, a lot of films that premiere at festivals don't have distribution yet, and so they're premiering, not even knowing if they'll ever, you know, end up in theaters,
right?
And so
that's weird to put that much work into it and to not even know that it'll be in a theater.
Yeah.
It's crazy, it's
really something. And so we got lucky. An amazing company called Cinedigm saw the film and they fell in love with it, and they've been amazing. They've been helping us get the word out about it, because it is one of those movies. It's a smaller made movie, and so it's going to survive and thrive and live with word of mouth and with
right.
You know, because it is a smaller film, so we're going to open in New York and LA first, and then we're going to, you know, roll it out to some other cities, and hopefully, you know, it'll become, you know, a snowball or something.
August 23rd is when we're being told that it comes
out. That's right, yeah.
And you, first of all, you should have worn some sort of superhero outfit. That's the way to get your movie in more theaters.
Yeah.
And second of all, you kind of glossed over it, but you have Brie Larson in your film,
yeah,
who is just about to be on a rocket ride to superstardom,
totally,
by all accounts. She's in all these movies that are coming out that everybody are just raving about, and apparently she's just like, you can't take your eyes off of her.
She's phenomenal in the film. It's not to sound cliche, but it is one of those moments where you really feel, oh wow, this is, you know, she's worked for years, but this is an arrival of sorts for her. I think it, you know, and that they, to use the term breakthrough performance, sometimes there's no other term but that to use.
Right.
And
she's only like 23 years old though, right?
I know. It's what she's accomplished already, and the maturity and like the well of kind of just the kind of grown up sensibility of kind of like tastefulness, and it's so very kind of small, and you have to really, you know, watch her, but it was inspiring to get to work with her, and going to the screenings and watching the movie time and time again, you know, there's always something new to catch in that performance.
When I was 23, I was still throwing rocks at my neighbor Robbie Joyner. That was my life.
Nice.
All right. And she's arrived.
Short Term 12 is the name of the film, again coming out in August. The Newsroom is on Sunday nights on HBO. In our remaining moments with actor John Gallagher Jr., I have to ask you about two other quick things.
Sure.
One is, you worked with Green Day. You were in American Idiot.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
That was really something else. That was
on
that
Broadway,
was such a
right? You were in the Broadway tape.
Yeah,
okay.
We did it on Broadway. We started it at Berkeley Rep near Oakland, where Green Day's from, and then did really well there, and so we moved it to Broadway and ran about a year on Broadway.
Did you like them?
Yeah,
you knew them before, yeah.
I had not. Yeah, I had been.
I don't
fans.
Mean know them, but I mean you like
oh,
the music.
Oh, I
before.
Was a huge fan. Right. I mean, especially that record. I remember, you know, when
American Idiot was a genius album.
It absolutely, yeah, you know, knocked me out of my seat. I thought it was so amazing. I certainly didn't think that I would be getting to, you know, to go into the studio and record with them and do this show. And, you know, Billy Joe actually came and did, you know, about 100.
I was
going to
ask you about that. I remember, yeah.
So it was one of those just surreal moments of thinking, you know. I really never thought, A, that I would get to meet Green Day and that I would be in a musical alongside Billy Joe Armstrong.
Yeah, there's no way to predict that.
He sang his own song and I sang with him. It was such a ride. It was
like if someone had come up amazing. To the teenage John Gallagher when you're driving around listening to the cassette of Dookie and
totally.
Said, one day you're going to be like buds with these guys, you wouldn't have believed it,
no,
right?
No, I would have laughed in your face.
Doesn't it seem like Billy Joe Armstrong seems so theatrical? I mean, not just in his music, but I mean, it seems like he ought to be an actor.
Yeah, I think that's why it was such a kind of natural evolution. You know, we did the show for about half a year, and then the producers had this idea, you know, we should get him up there. And he was terrified of it.
Was he really?
You know, he's the first to say that, he, you know, he was like, yeah, I can get up in front of thousands of people, but this is different. You know, yeah. he was
it's
kind of
not
bowing,
a concert setting.
Yeah, he was bowing down to us, the actors, and we were like, no way, we're bowing down to you. You know? So it was kind of this, we were always geeking out on each other.
We hear from stage actors all the time, like you, guys like you are so accomplished, that even though you go off and you do TV and movies, it doesn't replace what it feels like to be on stage. Do you want to go back and do Broadway again?
Oh, absolutely. It's true. You know, you said it perfectly just then, that there's really nothing really compares. I mean, I enjoy the kind of different facets of all different mediums, film, television, and theater. But there's just nothing like, you know, the communion that happens between, you know, the live audience and performers. And the fact that, you know, 2013, you know, we can access anything we want, you know, on our iPads. But there's still something that is just undeniable about going into a theater and the lights dim and then people
and it's live.
Come out on stage and put on a show.
And is it really, really different every night? Even though you're doing the same stuff?
It can be, definitely. You know, you could do something, you know, I've done hundreds of performances. Spring Awakening I did for a year solid, 8 shows a week. And
how do you not get tired of that?
You know, sometimes you do. Sometimes you really don't want to get on the subway and go to work. But, you know, just usually from my experience, right when that's starting to kick in, something new will happen. Some line will come out that you didn't think of in a certain way before, and it'll re-inspire you, or an audience will come and have a different reaction, or, you know, and something might happen, something might go wrong that's kind of a happy accident. And so it is one of those moments that, you know, you plan for you know, it to kind of go off without a hitch, but that's part of the magic of it. You never really know what's going to happen.
Right. I guess I'm always surprised, because I just feel like, A, you don't make nearly as much money, right, in the theater.
No one's getting rich.
And B, you're spending just as much time, spending just as many hours, and you're doing it for 500 people rather than you could be doing something for TV or movies that millions of people will see.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, and the
schedule. I say you're making a bad choice, John.
Yeah, wait, you know what? I'm never going back to the theater.
Well, you got a lot going on, and we can't thank you enough for squeezing in some time for us today. The Newsroom airs Sunday nights on HBO. Short Term 12 looks amazing. It's in theaters starting on October the 23rd. Definitely look for that.
August? John,
August. I'm sorry. Yes. Please come back and see us again, man. I really enjoyed it.
My pleasure.
Interview and performance from Lorde coming up here on the Kevin Amin Show in about 20 minutes. You've heard that song on K-Rock a lot called Royals, and she's got lots more where that came from. That's coming up. And then a little after 9 o'clock this morning, K-Rock Road Trip USA 2013, stop number 3, Depeche Mode in New York City. We'll put you on the standby boarding list. That's at 9:10 coming up this morning here on K-Rock.
Sylvester Stallone has been talking a lot about Expendables 3 and tweeting a lot about it as well. He does not seem to be a fan of Bruce Willis.
No, sounds like they had quite the falling out, because Bruce was in the first two movies, right?
I think it was, I don't
just
remember
the second one.
I think just in the second one.
Okay.
But certainly not in the third.
yeah.
He's out, and Harrison Ford is in. Harrison Ford.
Well, that's interesting.
Expendables 3. Seems like an odd choice.
Yeah.
I know he was an action star 75 years ago, but now I'm not sure he can keep up.
Right.
Who knows? But we thought we would check in with Sylvester Stallone and find out just exactly how that project is coming along and how he made that decision. Hi, Sylvester.
How are you guys doing?
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that.
It's a little unusual to see a big star like you publicly airing your dirty laundry with the whatever problems you're having with Mr. Willis.
Well, you know, when you work with somebody and you think you've developed a relationship, you know, and then they come in and they want, you know, $1 million a day for like 4 days of work, you know.
Right.
It's, you know, it's personally hurtful to me. And also, I think, you know, if you're greedy and lazy, that's a formula for career failure, you know.
Well, I'm not disagreeing that $1 million a day sounds like a lot to ask.
I know, right?
I think you have a pretty valid point
there.
We're
not trying to make a movie here, right?
Right, right.
I'll make a movie.
Okay, you don't have to shoot anything, Sly. Yeah. You don't have to shoot anything.
He drew first blood.
I hear you as a producer, but I don't know that you could accuse Bruce Willis of having a failing career. I mean, he's doing great these days.
I don't know. You see, the last Die Hard.
Yeah.
You did? You're the one.
Yeah, I'm the one.
You're the guy who saw it.
Yeah, I saw it.
I'm saying because he's lazy and greedy.
Yeah, don't shoot. What are you shooting at?
I got a cardboard cutout of Bruce Willis.
I see.
He makes like 20 movies a year, though. That's hardly lazy.
Yeah, you know, but here's the thing. You'll come work for me for 4 days, and you say, yeah, I'll do it. I'll do 4 days. $1 a day, I'll do 4 days. You know, you got to be mentally irregular to think that way, you know? Yep. I'm here trying to make a movie, for God's sake, for people to enjoy. I can't even pay $4 million for a guy who worked 4 days.
Especially when you have a huge cast, which you always do in this movie.
Yeah, everybody's got their hand out. You know, everybody wants money. I want money. You want money? I want money. I want money.
You got Arnold Schwarzenegger. You got Mickey Rourke.
Right.
You got Wesley Snipes.
Nice, we got him right out of jail, you know.
Dolph Lundgren.
Dolph's back.
Jackie Chan, Jet Li, Jason Statham. I mean, it's a great cast. And now Harrison Ford.
Yeah, finally, you know, I always wanted to work with him. And now I get to do it. I'm working with Harrison Ford, who's, you know, a great star. And don't want, you know, $1 million a day. You know what I mean?
All right. Now, are you a little worried that perhaps he's getting on in age? He's a little old to play in a super action movie.
Well, you know, we're all getting a little older.
Well, I know.
That's life, you know.
That's kind of the premise of the movie, too.
Yeah, it's just everybody gets older. Nothing you can do about that.
But he's old enough to be your dad.
You know, HGH and get a lot of plastic surgery. You know, that's all you can do.
Okay. But do you think he'll be able to hang with the rest of you?
Absolutely. We're rehearsing now. He's doing a good job, I think.
Oh, you're in rehearsals now.
To be nice, and you're making fun of the guy I'm working with right now.
Well, I'm just asking. I didn't know you were working with him right now.
We're working on, you know, some action scenes.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
You want to talk to him? Harry's right here. You want to talk to him?
Harrison Ford?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Hey! On the set of Expendables. Hey!
Why are you shooting? There's nothing to shoot at. Is that how you communicate?
Hello?
Harrison?
Yeah.
Hey, how's it going? It's Kevin and Bean.
Yeah, how's it going?
Well, congratulations on Expendables 3. This seems like an unusual movie choice for you.
Yeah, well,
Harrison, I apologize. I don't mean to interrupt. I can't make out what you're saying, sir.
Oh, you have your whip.
Yeah.
Got that. Didn't get much else. Are you excited about Expendables 3?
Yeah. I'm going to do a lot of action. And I'm doing, you know, my physical activity. We're going up and doing all the guys, and we're going to put it together.
I heard physical and activity. Those are two things that I just can't picture for me. Like, you should be the guy behind the desk while Dolph Lundgren and Schwarzenegger run by, I think.
No.
No, okay.
No, I'm gonna give me...
You're going to bring it.
I'm going to be in the action, and I'm going to, you know, get all my energy, and I'm going to put it out there for everybody to join.
Are you saving your energy for your performance?
No, this is me being very energetic, and I'm going to be, you know, put all the things that I have out there and all the opinions on the screen.
Have we been disconnected, or is it still on the phone?
He's still on the phone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Are you good guy or bad guy?
Well, it's a little early to be talking about. Well, in terms of whether it's going to be a good guy or bad guy, kind of going to dinners and wine and fun, take some fun out of it, you know, and find it for yourself.
Do you and Sylvester Stallone, are you able to communicate at all? Do you understand each other?
Do you have an interpreter?
No, yeah. We have a great relationship and work in communication. They pull it together, him and me, and we're all in the
day. Lisa, you got anything?
Are you done?
I don't, really.
Whoa! You're not shooting a gun.
Oh, I think I made a horrible mistake.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 7:53.
Our next guest coming in at the top of the hour, Ralph, we think was born in 1997.
1996, late 1996.
96, okay, yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
So that's happening.
All right. And she's doing so well that she's being flown all around America to perform live because she's super talented and good.
I've owned this shirt longer than she's been alive.
Anyway, we are very excited. Lord joins us in studio here on the Kevin and Bean Show to talk and perform live. First, Ralph's got the show. He's being here on a Thursday morning. What's going on?
Heard you guys talking to Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
It turns out he was telling you the truth, if you believe the Hollywood Reporter. Here's what happened between Sylvester Stallone and Bruce Willis, the falling out they had regarding The Expendables 3 that led to Harrison Ford being cast.
All right.
Bruce Willis was offered $3 million for 4 days of consecutive work on location in Bulgaria for the film.
That sounds fair.
Fair? They offered him
consecutive days. That means he would have flown out 1 weekend to Bulgaria, worked for 4 days, been able to get back on his private jet and go home. The whole trip total probably would have taken him a week to earn the $3 million.
Wow.
And he said no.
He came back and said unless he got $4 million, he would drop out of the film. He would not participate. And again, according to this story from the Hollywood Reporter, $1 million a day, Stallone and everyone else said no, said a source close to the production.
Wow.
Within 72 hours, he had been replaced by Harrison Ford, who, again, the insider connected to the production says, is a much better actor, a much nicer person, and a more interesting direction for the film. So everyone is very happy with the end result.
How about that?
$1 million a day. I'm going to make that demand. I'm not coming in tomorrow until I get $1 million a day to work on the Kevin and Bean Show.
We have enjoyed working with you.
Good luck.
Come on! All right. $1 million a week.
Okay. That we have.
You know, it is a more interesting direction. We've seen Bruce Willis in this movie.
Sure, yeah. Everyone's talking about the fact, well, how can Harrison Ford fit into that crazy world of Barney and his gang? Barney Ross. That's Stallone's name. Worst action.
It's not a good name.
Action character name ever. Barney Ross sounds like an accountant. Leonardo DiCaprio's got a new girlfriend. This may come as a shock. If you're eating, you may want to put down a fork if you're holding it or any sharp utensils near you. You're going to be shocked when I tell you that his new girlfriend is a woman named Tori Garn. And she is, for a change, for Leonardo DiCaprio, a Victoria's Secret model.
No! No! Now, when you say for a change, he's dated only Victoria's Secret models for
ten to 15 years.
Right.
That's all he dates, yeah. I meant to say this is exactly like all the other dates he's had.
He literally gets the catalog in the mail and just calls up the company and says, hey, I want you to send me this one.
Yeah. The Victoria's Secret website for him is like eHarmony.
Right.
He just goes there and clicks, and then one shows up in the mail.
Or maybe when it's time to break up with a Victoria's Secret model, he just hands her the phone and says, can you call another one?
Could you find your replacement for me?
Right.
So what happens? They turn 24 or something, and then he's over them? Or?
I don't know. But they were spotted in Ibiza, Spain this week, making out like they do.
Yeah.
And he said... Giselle Bundchen, he dated her.
Yep, right.
Bar Raffaelli.
Yeah. Sure.
Erin Featherston.
Yes.
Yep.
Blake Lively, she broke the mold because she was an actress, not a Victoria's Secret
Still
model.
Super hot.
But
Sarah Abramson?
No, he didn't date her, Kevin. Come on. Gosh sakes, Kevin.
Sorry.
There's a health scare with the Honey Boo Boo clan. Well, of course. You'd have to expect that, wouldn't you?
Of course.
They live on cheese balls and chicken poop. Do they eat the chicken poop or is it just in the house?
No, it's hard to see. It's hard to tell.
Look, if they're eating the cheese balls off the floor and the chickens are pooping on the floor, they're eating chicken poop, too.
That's all bad.
The father of the clan, Mike Sugar Bear Thompson, has a mystery illness. I love that reality show, by the way.
Mystery illness?
Mystery illness, yeah. You get to dial the special toll-free phone number and vote on what you think it is. He's undergoing tests at the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida, because he's had a series of dizzy spells that began on Memorial Day weekend and just haven't let up.
Is it possible he just has got to get out?
Yeah. I think if I lived with that family, I'd get dizzy, too. I'd be like, oh, I'm getting a little woozy from all the redneckery. So we'll wait and see how he's doing, but...
I don't remember which one of the daughters it was. It might have been it wasn't Chickadee. She was the pregnant one. I think it was Pumpkin, who last season was in the hospital for a mystery illness. They had a big exciting episode where they called 911 and put her in the hospital for a few days.
I'm sorry, I stopped listening when you said it wasn't Chickadee. It was Pumpkin.
Right, I know.
That's when I stopped being able to hear what you were talking about.
I feel like their home is like they're living in a toxic dump or something.
Yeah, they're the Love Canal family.
They really are.
Today's celebrity birthdays, Megan Good, 32 years old today. Actress Lindsay Sloan is 36. Tom Linton of Jimmy Eat World is 38. Scott Stapp of Creed celebrates his 40th birthday. Rapper Kool Moe Dee, 51 years old today. Ricky Rocket, drummer of Poison, is 52. The Edge from U2 is also 52. Keith Carradine, 64 years old today. Larry Wilcox, he was on Chips for many seasons as John to Eric Estrada's Punch. He's 66 years old. And actor Dustin Hoffman, who's recovering from cancer surgery, apparently he's healthy and doing well, 76 years old today. They were all born on today, August the 8th. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
We've been playing the song called Royals quite a bit for the past few weeks here on the Kevin and Bean Show and throughout the day at K-Rock. And we are very excited to welcome the young lady who wrote the song, sings the song, Lord, in studio with us on K-Rock right now.
Hi.
Hey, Lord. What's going on?
Well, it's pretty early in the morning.
Yeah,
but I'm kind of at the point where I've had so many different time zones that I'm like,
you don't have any idea where you are or what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, tell me about your travel schedule this week alone, because I do follow you on Twitter, and it does seem like they've been working you pretty hard this week.
I think I work myself quite hard. I'm like, no, I can do it. It's cool.
When did you leave New Zealand?
Friday morning.
Okay.
And then it took like 26 hours here or something, but then I got home Friday night. Which
and
is
this
weird
was, when you say here, you mean America. You were in New York,
yeah.
Right?
I was in New York.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I flew yesterday morning to L.A., and I'm here till Saturday.
You're on a pace to die.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Right.
You know that. You're all right. Okay.
What do you do? How often have you made the trip from New Zealand to the United States on a plane?
This is actually my first time.
First time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Huge.
What did you do for 26 hours on a plane?
Oh, man.
That's about as long as you can spend on a plane going from point A to point B on the whole world.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I know. I just got like a really sore neck. Just cultivated that neck pain.
You watch movies?
I did, but then my laptop died.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Part way in.
Yeah.
And then you still have 23 hours left.
Yeah, yeah.
Now what do you do?
Yeah.
Can you sleep on a plane?
Well, I discovered this thing called NyQuil.
Yeah.
It's
yes.
Like great sleeping tool. But
then you wake up and you have 20 hours.
Yeah. What we're saying is it's a long flight.
Yeah.
So is this a stupid question? What do you think of America so far? I mean, it's probably a country that you have been familiar with because of the entertainment that we export around the world.
Absolutely.
And now you're finally here. Is it what you thought it would be like?
It's mental. Like, it's hard for me to believe that this country could exist in the same world that New Zealand exists in.
Oh, is that right?
It's so,
why?
So,
what's
so different.
How different?
Just like general energy and vibes. Like I feel like I'm in, especially in LA, I feel like I'm in a set for a film.
You're right. On a
probably
film
because
set. Okay.
Like New York and LA are, you know, in so many TV shows and movies and stuff that,
right,
you know, it,
feels it doesn't
so
seem
familiar.
Real.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. And the places have so much character. It's awesome. I love it.
Now, you're 16.
Yes.
What do most people ask you about when they start talking about the fact that you're 16? What's the question that you get the most?
Usually I get like, how can you write at that age? And I'm like, I don't know. I've never been any other age.
I don't really know.
Like,
an
I've never been
that.
Older than that, so it's difficult
right.
for me to
When I was 29, I was writing well, but now I'm 16.
Yeah, it's weird.
Well, I think people probably are fascinated by the fact that you're only 16.
And
you
impressed.
Can,
yeah.
And impressed, right. And you can write. When I was 16, throwing rocks at my neighbor, Robbie Joyner.
Right. You did not have a song on K-Rock when
None.
You were 16, Kevin.
Nope.
I also find this fascinating, and I know a lot of our listeners do too, is that it's not like you just woke up one day a month ago and said, hey, I'm going to write a song. I mean, you kind of have known this was going to be your thing. You've had this feeling of, hey, I want to make music and hey, I want to write songs for years at this point, right?
Yeah, yeah. I've been working with my record company since I was like 12, I think.
Did you get signed to a record company when you were 12?
Yeah, I was signed at 13, but they saw a footage of me singing in my school talent show. And I was like just a vocalist at that point. And
what song did you sing when they
I sang Warwick Avenue by Duffy.
Okay.
You remember
good
Duffy?
Song, sure.
Yeah. But yeah, and then since then I've just been like writing songs and, you know, having vocal coaching and figuring out my sound.
When you started writing these songs and you're 13 and then you're 14 and then you're 15, were you really anxious to get it out? Like, was it tough for you to wait for the time that
Not
you
really,
finally...
because I'm very much about cleanliness. Like, I don't like there being a lot of, you know, like, I'm glad I don't have, like, 50 leaked demos out there or whatever.
Right.
Because I feel like you know, we all have the internet and, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a demo because it's on YouTube and everyone's going to listen to it. So
right.
It was quite important to me to not put stuff out until I was confident that I thought it was cool. Like, I wrote the EP when I was 15 in that year, but I didn't put it out for, like, quite a few months after I'd finished it.
Now, I read an interview where you were talking about where you were when you were 15, and it seems like that was a different time for you.
Well, I think, like, every teenager, like, every 6 months is, like, colossally
different. Of course, it is. But singing those songs now, what, does it feel strange?
Kind of.
Because you have a new album, right? It's going to come out at the end of September.
My first album, yeah.
Her first album comes out at the end of September.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But are you finished with that one?
I am, yes. Okay. It's all done.
Tell me about your home situation. You have parents, brothers, sisters?
I have parents and two sisters.
We learned the hard way not to ask about mom and dad because one could be dead or separated or what. It can go south fast.
Ooh, yeah.
So hey, how are things going with your home life?
Yeah. Well, I have parents and I have two sisters and a brother and a lot of pets and stuff. So it's
a lot of pets, did you say?
Pet.
Oh, what kind of pets?
Pets.
Yeah, there we go.
You said pit, but all right, okay.
I don't know.
What kind of pits do you have?
Very hairy ones. I've got dogs and cats, and my mom wants a bird, and we've had rats and mice and guinea pigs, and I think we were going to get lizards. I don't know, there's all sorts. I want to get a snake, but you can't have that in New Zealand.
You can't?
No. Oh, you're not allowed to?
Which frustrates me every day.
Yeah. Is it because, like England, they don't allow snakes on the whole island because they've banished them?
Well, I think we have a lot of bird life, and it's like, you know, conflict of interest or whatever. But
you still go to school, Lord?
I do, yeah.
And what's that like? Because you're played on the radio. I mean, your song has been number one on the radio in New Zealand, so obviously everybody knows you. What's that like?
Well, I mean, I've been going to my school for like 4 years, so everyone just knows me as like that person with lots of hair and, like, I don't know.
That's so weird.
Yeah. It's okay. Like, everyone who I know at school is really chilled about it. Some teachers, like, fan out.
Oh, that's bad.
I'm like,
isn't that interesting? The grown-ups are the ones who fan out, huh?
Yeah, it's weird.
That's weird. But do they give you better grades because of it?
No.
Oh, come on. You got to get something out of it.
Yeah. But I know what I know about being a teenage girl in high school is only from the movie Mean Girls, so this might not be completely accurate.
No.
Which
really
is a movie that came out, I think, before you were born. But aren't there some girls who are just mean to you because you're famous and they're like, oh, you think you're all that. Oh, you're better than me. Don't you get some pushback from other students?
Not really, because I've never been one of those like super hot, sassy, like popular, crazy girls. So, you know, like I hang out with the boys a lot and I just muck around. I'm quite chilled out.
Seem low key, yeah.
Yeah.
How many songs you reckon you've written at this point?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe like, I would say less than 50, but like between 35 and 50 maybe total, like that I'm happy with. But then the stuff I wrote when I was like 12, it was like not cool.
And in interviews, it seems like it always comes up that your favorite kind of music is hip-hop music.
I enjoy hip-hop, but, you know, I love electronic music. I feel like that's my first love.
Have you been – is any of the stuff that you do in that direction at all? Like, would you ever do a hip-hop record?
I have this, like, barely contained desire to rap.
Oh, please rap.
But in a cool way. In a cool way, you know what I mean? Not like a terrible, crass way.
You like Kanye. Can you do Stronger for us in a minute?
I actually would know. I know all the words.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Now, this must be weird for you because you're now in the music industry. You're a known quantity. You have a hit record on the radio. You're going to be running in circles where it's likely that you might meet Kanye West. I mean, that's got to be the strangest thing.
I was actually in a meeting yesterday and he had been in the same office 24 hours before. So I was like, it's close.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Same
year. Would you fan out if you met Kanye?
I don't know. Either it would be like he was like an uncle.
Yeah.
You know, like you'd just be so bro or like just terrible fan out. I'd probably just freak.
Would you sit there and sweat. Would you be able to say anything?
I could definitely riff with Kanye.
All right.
Muck around. Yeah. Tease him a little bit about the VMAs. I'll say, like, I'll like interrupt and be like, oh, no, I'll let you finish.
Yeah. Maybe you shouldn't do that.
The voice of Lord here on the Kevin and Bean Show. We're going to be hearing from her live and her song called Royals here in just a few minutes on the Kevin and Bean Show. You played in New York a sold-out show, your first show in America, and it was sold out. Mm-hmm. Tell me what that was like, playing in front of an American audience, or was it exactly the same as playing back home?
It was actually really, really good vibes. I feel like it's kind of understandable, like, in my country. People are really supportive, but they also want to, I don't know, they don't want to be, like, fooled by anything. So they're quite, like,
so they're kind
quite
skeptical?
A critical audience. Yeah, quite a skeptical audience, and they don't get down and boogie as much.
Really, they don't let themselves go? They just sit there and go, okay, what else you got?
Yeah, it's a lot more analytical, I think. But, no, it was a lot of fun. It was really cool.
And you're playing tonight, too, another sold-out show. That's going to be at the Echoplex.
Yeah.
So now you have sold-out shows in New York and L.A.
Well, yeah, they're not, like, huge shows or anything, so.
Just say, yes, I do.
Yes, you know it.
What do you play on stage? What instruments?
I don't play anything. I just sing.
Okay. Yeah, you have a band?
Yeah, I do have a band. But so I feel like...
So you had to hire a touring band to go around with you.
Yeah. They're cool. I feel like a lot of female musicians try and like half-heartedly play something on stage to look like they can play something. But I'm like, you know, I'm not really that good at any instrument, and I would rather devote myself to doing the thing that I can do, you know?
It seems a little, if you're standing out there alone, it also seems a little like awkward. What do you do with yourself? I think maybe that's why some people grab a guitar or something. Or,
It is strange, and especially because I cannot dance at all.
You can't dance at all?
I'm really, really bad.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. It's just, you gotta...
Are New Zealanders the whitest people in the world? Is that what's going on here?
Well, I might be. I don't want to speak for the whole population here.
But you might be the whitest person in the world.
All right, we're going to take a break here. When you write your songs, since you don't play instruments, do you just write words and you have no melody in mind and then you collaborate with somebody who puts it to a tune?
Well, no, it kind of changes. Like, I would say 80% of the time I will write most or all the lyric to a song, and then I'll take it into my co-writer, and then everything else is collaborative. We do all the melodies, all the beats, everything together. But these days I've started to write, like, you know, a melody first or, like, a beat, like, mouth drums into the microphone of my iPhone.
I'd like to hear some of that off
it's
your
bad.
iPhone.
Really
I would
bad.
Like to hear some of the stuff on your iPhone.
Not good.
The show at the Echoplex tonight is sold out. However, we are going to be giving away some tickets here in a couple minutes. And Lord is coming back, too, by the way, in September, playing at a venue called Belasco. Do you know what that is, Kevin? Have you heard of Belasco?
I have not. I don't know what that is.
That's going to be on September the 25th. We'll find out some more about that and fill you in and hear some live music from our guests when we return right after this on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock.
Lord is here and is going to perform live for us. Are you ready to go?
I am.
All right. Lord, live on the world famous K-Rock.
I've never seen the diamonds in the flesh. I count my teeth on wedding rings in the movies. And I'm not proud of my address. In a torn up town, no postcode envy. But every song's like gold teeth, gray goose dripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room. We don't care. We're driving Cadillacs in our dreams. But everybody's like crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on the gold leash. We don't care. We aren't caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royal. It's the one in our blood. That kind of luck just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler. You can call me Queen Bee.
Baby, I'll
let me live that fantasy. My friends and I, we've cracked the code. We count our dollars on the train to the party, and everyone who knows us knows.
come for money. But every song's like gold teeth, gray goose tripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room. We don't care. We're driving Cadillacs in our dreams. But everybody's like crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on the gold leash. We don't care. We aren't caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royals. It's the one in our blood. The kind of luxe just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler. You can call me Queen Bee. Baby, I'll let me live that fantasy. We're bigger than we ever dreamed, and I'm in love with being queen. Oh, oh, oh. Life is great without the care. We aren't caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royals. It's the one in our blood. That kind of luck just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler. You can call me Queen Bee. Baby, out. Let me live that fantasy.
No way.
Really?
That's all right.
Oh, sorry.
that sounded incredible.
Thank you.
And you're sick.
Yeah.
And you claim to be sick because that we wouldn't expect much, but clearly you're not. That sounds amazing. That is Lord performing live here on the Kevin and Bean Show. By the way, tickets are going on sale for the upcoming date in September that we mentioned at the Belasco Theater. We did some recon on. That is downtown near the Mayan. Apparently it is a great space downtown. Tickets are going on sale for that show tomorrow at 10. If you want to see Lord at the sold-out Echoplex show, please call K-Rock right now at 1-800-520-106. And we have a few pair of tickets to give away to people who are listening right now. Lord, how was that for you? Was that cool?
Yeah, good. You,
it was wonderful. Thank you so much for visiting Los Angeles. Thank you so much for visiting K-Rock and the Kevin and Bean Show. We really enjoyed meeting you. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
It's been so long, Kevin. Help me remember that doctor, that guy in the suit with the TV show that we used to have.
Dr. Phil.
It was Dr. Phil. I thought it was, yeah. Well, he joins us here on the... Oh, no, I'm getting a note now. It's Dr. Drew Pinsky from HLN Weeknights who joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Doc, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Am I really welcomed back?
Yes, you are. We
missed
you.
I have missed you guys, too. I really have. And to be welcomed back in that manner, I don't know. I'm really hurt.
Yeah, I feel like you took the summer off, but we're so excited to have you back because there's so much stuff going on in the news that we want to talk to you about. I missed your show last night, but you had the whore on, Sydney Leathers?
I had Sydney Leathers on. And again, guys, are we really blaming her? I mean, is she the problem or is he the problem?
Well,
the problem?
I'd say they both are, but
yeah, I
would too.
Let's describe to people who she is first.
She is the woman that Anthony Weiner contacted about a year ago, really virtually on the eve of having announced that he has a problem with sexting and sending pictures of himself and that he was going to take care of that and he no longer has that problem, and immediately began sexting this woman five times a day. Five times a day.
And how did he find her, by the way? Because we've heard reports that she was kind of putting herself out there on some of these sugar daddy websites, like she was looking for this kind of action online.
She apparently is like a political junkie, and he was a fan of his and was really writing him on I think, Facebook and sort of admired him and then said, geez, I'm so disappointed that you've been behaving this way. And like a month later or something, he kind of poked at her through Facebook and sent her a note saying, well, you know, I'm fine now, or how are things? And antics ensued.
Right. Why did she expose him, Dr. Drew, if she was a fan of his and liked him?
Well, this is the interesting question. I mean, I think she was in love with him, frankly. And that. And by the way, she's going to be on Loveline tonight, and we'll get into it in much greater detail.
Fantastic.
Yes, it was very limited. You know, the conversation is limited on HLN. But I think she was in love with him, and when things weren't working out, maybe she's a little PO'd. Maybe this is a scorned lover. She claims that she never had any intention of going public, that she sent the transcripts of this conversation anonymously to some political website, but that BuzzFeed found out it was her, and that's when she decided just to come forward with everything.
But why would she? Why did she send it anonymously?
Well, she sent it all because she said that when he decided to run for mayor and was lying about what he was up to, she felt she had a response. Now, whether this is true or not, we'll sort of grill her tonight on Loveline. She's actually, I think, you know, look, this guy's got a problem, right? I mean, yeah. I think right now, as we speak.
Oh, agreed. Kevin, agreed.
He's sexting right now, right?
Yeah, probably.
No doubt in my mind.
He is. I mean, that's what's fascinating about this story is, look, we could spend 20 minutes just talking about what's going on in her life, or we could spend 20 minutes talking about what's going on in Mr. Wiener's life. I think they both got problems. But let's talk about the male side of this, because you see this all the time. I mean, you deal with a lot of different kinds of addictions, and you deal with a lot of different people who have sexual issues like this. What's going on with a guy like Anthony Wiener, who's a happily, by all accounts, happily married man to a great woman who's very pretty and very smart, and he's got this little baby at home, and he's got these aspirations for this political career. Why can't he stop finding strange on the internet, Dr. Drew? What's going on in his head?
Well, it's interesting, being the way you sort of frame it as why can't he stop. I mean, you could really ask that question of any addiction, and that's what makes it an addiction. If somebody can stop, they don't need to see somebody like me. They should just stop.
So they don't have an addiction, and he does.
Well, and it's in, at least, you know, people debate whether sexual addiction exists, but certainly as a frame, a way of understanding these kinds of behaviors, the construct of sexual addiction is very, very helpful. And we can help people by applying the kinds of things we do to treat addiction to situations like this. Now, clearly there's personality issues. He may have bipolar disorders, all these other things going on that also need to be treated. But this ability to change compulsive behavior is something we kind of do in these sort of, you know, sort of 12-step models and group models tend to work very, very well. If you remember when Tiger Woods had, you know, claimed forward and said, I have an addiction. And
right.
Yeah. And then he talked very, 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 in a very heartfelt fashion about his peers and how they've been so supportive and how this is out of control. He's feeling shame. You never hear anything like that from Anthony Wiener. And that's how you know he's not getting better. He's not, nor is he even getting treatment. So, yes, it's something that we shake our head and go, how is this possible? And by the way, how is it even physically possible? This guy is doing his thing five times a day to this woman.
Yeah.
Yes. And probably has other ones going at the same time.
You're not.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
how
true.
Is that possible? That's how you know there's like, wow, there's really something going on here that needs treatment. And I don't see any evidence that he's doing anything.
Maybe he has two penises.
Or six of them, for God's sake. He's got many to spare.
Is the physical rush similar to what an addict might get if he was abusing drugs or alcohol?
It's the same regions of the brain. It's why when, you know, people debate about does sex addiction exist, they apply, you know, other, you know, sort of milder sexual compulsions. We start, you know, looking at it as kind of an addiction. But when people are really out of control with it, and you look at it and you go, oh my God, how's that possible even? That's how you know you really got an addiction going. And when you have that going, it is the same regions of the brain that are activated during chemical addiction. Obviously, chemical addictions shift things into a non-physiological state, into a really altered state by the effects of the drugs. You don't have that so much, but you have these same powerful systems operating that people can't volitionally or consciously exert any real control.
So Anthony Wiener literally can't stop and needs help.
He needs help. But yeah, he needs help.
And you can tell that by, I think I've heard you say before, if it impacts your life negatively and you can't stop, is that one of the things?
It's loss of control. It's misery from something that used to be enjoyable. It's inability to stop in spite of consequences. And then you know, because people, when they have consequences, normally stop things.
Right.
And by the way, not just then, this is escalating. This is like getting worse still. And all kinds of consequences, and think of the level of denial, which is also part of this, that he has to maintain to keep brushing this aside. It really, you just look at it and your head kind of spins, like how could he possibly keep going, and how did he maintain this in the first place?
Now, if I lived in the city of New York, there's no way in a million years I vote for Anthony Wiener to be my mayor. But let me ask you this, doctor. Is it possible that somebody can have this kind of addiction to sexting that he does and also still do a good job as mayor?
Yeah, it's a great question. And when people say, well, these are his personal issues. What's the big deal? It doesn't harm anybody. It's like I'm sympathetic to that. But if you're doing this 5 or 10 times a day, I don't know how you have time to be a mayor. That's going to affect your functioning. Just like all addictions, it's going to affect your functioning eventually. And on top of that, think about the morality clauses that say the people that he would be administering over sign on to and who would lose their job immediately if they were engaged in anything like this. and yet he gets to maintain his job and go on leading. That's pretty difficult to maintain.
I think there's also the politics is a really, really, really dirty game, and your opponents have stuff to latch onto, and it makes it so that you really can't do your job efficiently, even if you're able to.
It's such a distraction, right?
Yeah.
Even if you were doing it once a month, if that were out there as a topic of discussion. I mean, remember how it paralyzed Bill, this kind of thing, paralyzed Bill Clinton's administration.
Right.
It's a paralyzing thing. And people take issue with it. I mean, you know, we want our leaders to maintain a certain level of moral decorum, please. At least, you know, I think about it. And by the way,
and the line's pretty low for our politicians, really.
We could do another 20 minutes on poor Huma and you know, why she stands up.
That was going to be my last question is,
please tell us.
What do you think is going on there? It can't just be, I enjoy the money that we make and we have a small kid to raise, can it?
Well, of course, people will commit because of kids, but she, you know, this guy's a bigger-than-life narcissistic character, and some people really get attached to those kinds of people and continue to idealize them in spite of whatever they manifest. And, you know, whenever there's an addict, there's got to be a co-addict or codependent that allows them to maintain their condition. And she, in some fashion, again, it's all been very private, so we're just looking from the outside in. She, in some fashion, is participating in this. And, it's funny. I'm just having this thought right now. If somebody were to get treatment, it would probably be her. And it could be her that then starts setting down the law that gets him finally into proper care.
What do you think women think of her?
I think there's a mix. Was that Bean or was that me? No. Or was that Greg Brady?
That was you.
there's a mixed bag here in how women respond to her. I think sometimes they feel admiration, she'll stand by her man. On the other hand, I think people have run out of patience with that, and they feel like, why should this woman have to stand by there and be
right.
humiliated like this? It's not necessarily a message we want to give our young daughters.
Even once, a lot of people feel that way, but then when it's repeated, you just go, come on.
Well, but that's in that case, but these kinds of stories are coming out in the press all the time, and we like the idea that women will commit to men. On the other hand, we kind of want them to go, all right, enough already.
I
think the healthy position is, hey, enough already, you get treatment, we'll see how this goes, and really be circumspect when you get up there. It's like, look, I'm committed to this guy, I'm going to be a good wife, but hey, man, if this guy doesn't get his S together, I'm out of here.
Right.
Yeah. Well, fascinating stuff, Dr. Drew. And Sydney Leathers, as you mentioned, who is the woman who kind of came forward and exposed Wiener as still sexting, is going to be on Loveline tonight with you and Mike Catherwood. That's at 10 o'clock here on Loveline. And then, of course, HLN weeknights at 6. Dr. Drew, we missed you this summer, man. It's so great to have you back. We'll do it again next week.
Appreciate it, guys.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ, and you are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show at 8:55.
She won't be coming back. That's what I'm saying.
Yes, she will.
She was fantastic, Ralph.
All right.
Lord.
Love, Lord.
Where was Rodney? Why did Rodney stop by and meet her?
My sweet Lord.
She was great. What a voice.
George Harrison wrote a song about her.
Right. Unrelated to this
All
completely.
Right.
Completely. Hey, the cavalcade of great guests continues on The Kevin and Bean Show. Lisa, you're going to be very impressed. He's a charming young he's Scottish or Irish? I think he's Irish.
Irish. Yeah, he's Irish.
Mm-hmm. Richard Flood is going to be joining us in studio. He's from the TV show called Crossing Lines on NBC that people are loving. So
it's
we'll talk
show.
To Mr. Flood coming up here next. First, Ralph's got the Showbiz Beat on a Thursday morning Kevin and Bean Show. What's up?
He's got William Fichtner in it.
Yeah, he's so good.
Yes,
Love in everything that he does. He's got Elysium coming out this weekend as well. He's one of those character actors who works constantly, and everything he does is improved when he's in it.
And I would never have recognized his face had I not seen this Crossing Lines. Like, I mean, I recognize his face, but not the name. I didn't know his name. Fichtner. I had no idea. I'm just saying, I had no idea that was his name.
Yeah.
But I've seen him in 100 things.
Yes.
Omar, can you get us that
Come
moment
on.
With before the end of this Showbiz Beat, please? I need to hear it again.
What?
That was just a downward spiral of logic. That.
So wait, you recognize him or you don't recognize him? I'm confused.
F you. We're just confused, man. We're just trying to figure things out. Donald Sutherland also on that show. Great cast. Good stuff. All right, let's talk about showbiz news, shall we? Oh, bad times in the Kardashian household.
Great.
Excellent. Yeah, that makes me happy. Lamar Odom reportedly had an affair with a woman for 6 weeks while still married, of course, to his wife, Khloe Kardashian. This story comes to us from the Star magazine. This woman has come forward claiming that she had a 6-week affair with Lamar when he was temporarily out of the house staying at the Roosevelt Hotel. That's where they met. And she says that Khloé found out and showed up at the hotel with her mom, Kris Jenner, in tow and was so mad she broke the door to the hotel room. Here's the thing. It was the wrong hotel room. Then Lamar and this woman, Polina Polanski, moved to her place for 2 weeks, and mom and daughter showed up there. By the way, look. Bad times for the Odom Kardashian household, but I guess they patched it up because they're together again, as far as I know.
Let's back up just a bit. You guys have stayed in a lot of hotels.
Yes, I have.
Those doors are not easy to break down.
Well, it's Khloé.
I know, but that's my point. Those doors don't just give way.
She just huffed and she puffed and she blew the house down. That's all she had to do.
Was she a robot or a monster in Pacific Rim?
I'm sorry. What happened?
Sorry, that was Muggs. What, Bean?
Muggs on my last nerve today, guys. He really
today,
is.
Today?
Yeah, you and me both.
Another day, another cruddy television reality show. This one is called, as if I don't have enough people to hate. They're daring me to hate more. E! Is putting together a show called The Rich Kids of Instagram.
All right.
You know all those kids who post pictures of themselves at 18 on their yachts drinking champagne? And
yep, Ryan.
Throwing Armani suits off the bow into the ocean because they've worn them once?
Because they can.
Stuff? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is based on those kids, the rotten 20-somethings who have their lives followed by...
Is it fiction or
people? No, it's based on the actual kids from The Rich Kids of Instagram. It'll be called The Rich Kids of Beverly Hills. And it will feature them being the most spoiled, rotten bastards ever. So E! Is going to bring you that. E!'s doing some good work over there.
That's what those kids need now is to be famous on top of rich.
More of attention. Yeah.
Right.
That's what they need. Here's some good TV news. Paul Reubens announced in an interview with the LA Times that Pee Wee Herman's returning to television.
What's that?
Coming back to TV with a new show next year. The original Pee Wee's Playhouse, for those of you who don't remember, ran for several years in the 80s. And then he had his big revival stage show on Broadway in 2010, also played here in Los Angeles. And there's also another Pee-wee movie in the works as well. So some 30 years later, Pee-wee making a big resurgence, which is kind of cool. Paul Reubens is now 60 years old, the man who plays Pee-wee.
Wow.
You'd never know what to look at him, though.
It seemed like he had run out of steam on the Pee-wee character, buried it, tried to do some other things, and then enough time went by where...
Well,
he just got nostalgic for it? Or
sort of had to retire the character.
Yeah, there was that.
Right.
Once he was found with a handful of himself.
Right. There was that.
It was hard to do even a pseudo-children's show, I think, given the publicity surrounding that particular activity. And he did separate himself from the character and try to do some other things, which he did, and to varying degrees of success. Very successful voiceover artist, appeared in some other projects. And I think once all was forgiven and forgotten, he was free to bring Pee-wee back into the limelight. And we're glad he's back.
Fantastic.
I'm touching myself! Today's celebrity birthdays. Megan Good is 32 years old today. Lindsay Sloan turns 36. Tom Linton, guitarist for Jimmy Eat World, is 38. Scott Stapp of Creed is 40. Cool Moe Dee, the rapper, is 51. Ricky Rocket, drummer for Poison, is 52. The Edge, guitarist for U2, is also 52. Keith Carradine, actor of the acting Carradine family, is 64 years old. Larry Wilcox, who played John of Punch and John on Chips, he's 66. And Dustin Hoffman, about as good as it gets. You know, a lot of actors, as they got older, I think lost their luster. De Niro started making a bunch of crappy movies. Pacino now is sort of a self-parody.
Yeah, it's
true. The legends of the 70s who sort of reinvented what it meant to be a movie star in the 70s. A lot of them lost their luster, but I think Dustin Hoffman has pretty much stayed on target in terms of when you see a
good
film
projects,
yeah, that he's in, it gives it prestige to a certain extent. He is 76 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show business.
Sunday nights at 10 o'clock on NBC is a program called Crossing Lines that you should be watching. We are excited to welcome actor Richard Flood from the show in studio with us here on the Kevin Bean Show. Hi, Mr. Flood. How are you, sir?
Hello. Very well. Thank you.
We're going to talk about the show and fill people in on what they're missing if they're not already watching. But first, we need to talk about you because you look like hell.
Look pretty good for feeling like hell. Let's say that.
You look like you barely crawled in here this morning. What's your weekend been like and your week?
Well, I just got back from Ireland. I was at one of my best friend's wedding, which lasted about 3 days.
Ooh.
So, yeah, that might be why I'm looking a little shaky this morning.
Now, a wedding in Ireland is a three-day affair always?
Usually, yeah. You'd have the evening beforehand, which is a get-together usually of all the friends and a few drinks. Then you'd have the main reception and everything the next day, the wedding, obviously.
A few drinks.
And a few drinks.
Right.
And then the following day is usually some sort of barbecue and things where the parents usually go home and the friends all kind of stay together.
And that's the real party.
That's when we kind of do a bit more drinking.
How often do you get back to Ireland?
You know, well, I only kind of moved here in May, really. So, and I'd been living in London before that. So when I was living in London, I was back once every kind of 3 months. I'd try to get back at least. But now it's, because it's a little bit further, it's a little bit more difficult.
Sure.
But I got back this time and I was able to stay for kind of a couple of weeks and see the family and friends and all that. So it's nice.
You live in America now, obviously, because of crossing lines. Is this the first role that has that you've had that's required you to move to the United States?
Yeah, well, I mean, we shoot the whole show and everything in Europe, so I didn't need to be here, but I won a green card in the lottery because I'm
really?
Irish. That's how lucky I am. So, and with the show coming out and everything, it seemed like it was the right time to make that move. It made sense.
That's super interesting because we always hear about the waiting list of people who want to live in the United States, get a green card, and that it's almost impossible to do. But is there a lottery in all countries, or is that just how Ireland handles it?
It's not in all countries. It's in a lot, but Ireland has a particularly good relationship with America, so we get a large quota. For the number of people who enter, we get quite a large quota of...
How about that?
Of green cards awarded to us. So, yeah, I have a lot of friends, you know, who've managed to get it. And once you're in it enough times, the chances are it might go your way.
So. And when it comes your way, you take it?
No questions asked. You take it as fast as you can.
Now, where do you shoot the show? Crossing Lines, for those of you who don't know, describe an overview of the show for people who haven't seen it yet.
Well, Crossing Lines is about an international team of detectives working for the ICC, and we travel around Europe crossing lines and crossing borders, but solving crimes that are crossing borders. So there can be a crime in Ireland that we link to a crime in the UK, to France, and we're the only team that's allowed kind of go into all those different jurisdictions.
And describe the team for people who haven't seen it, because it's a weird mishmash of...
Yeah, the team
great,
is,
different people.
Is you know, it's made of... There's some Americans. You've Donald Sutherland and William Fichtner in there. Then you've French, Mark Lavoine, Moon Daly's in there as well. You've English, Genevieve O'Reilly, you've me, and then you've an Italian and a German, Gabrielle Pession.
There you go. Let's talk about Gabrielle.
That's what he was waiting for.
Got your attention, didn't we, Kevin? That's really the only reason we're having you on.
Yeah.
To be fair, we're just trying to get to Gabrielle.
I don't blame you.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she's very sweet.
So it's a United Nations of police, basically.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, everybody has their special skill, but then... It's interesting because they're all very different cultures. They're all Europe, but they're all very different cultures, and you see kind of how they people bump heads a little bit. And there's
you know what's interesting about it is that all of you are specialists in one thing or another.
Sure,
but as the show moves along, all of you have severe flaws as well.
Yeah, well, that was kind of key to it. That was Ed Bernero who created, you know, who's very well known here for Criminal Minds and Third Watch. You know, that's one of his big things is he likes characters with flaws. You know, they seem to be one thing, but they have very developed backstories. So he worked with all of us and talked to us a lot about, you know, our backstories. And well, my backstory in particular is quite interesting with Tommy McConnell and his travelling background.
From Ireland,
from Northern Ireland. From a
shady family.
A travelling background, yeah, shady.
Don't get along with him. Was it the last episode that you called your mom and...
It was, I believe,
That's the last one that aired.
Yeah.
You call your mom, and you get the feeling like, this guy hasn't called his mom in 10 years, maybe.
In the earlier episodes,
right?
You figure out, yeah, exactly, that his family are, they actually have a hit out on him, a £10,000 hit.
Family, huh?
Yeah.
So for people who think things are not going well with their own families, you can feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, exactly.
No one's trying to kill you.
Yeah, so Tommy has a very difficult relationship with his family, and the only person he actually talks to in secret, essentially, is his mum, which you saw in the last episode.
Yes.
In that phone call. And it will develop in the next couple of episodes, you'll see.
And you tell your mom, tell so-and-so, I think maybe a brother or somebody, that you saw him. That's the only message.
Exactly.
That you see him.
I saw him, and I want to talk to him.
What is going on with these people? What's going on behind the scenes?
Yeah, it's good. It really starts to develop now for Tommy in particular in the next couple of episodes. And it's very
interesting. Is there a real international criminal court?
There is an ICC, yeah, but it doesn't have the same kind of powers that we have.
Because to me, what you guys are doing is it's like Interpol, right? That's what it reminds me of.
But for reals, like with teeth.
Yeah, well, what Ed's thing was that he really was basing it on the start of the FBI in this country, in that there was no... There was no federal force or whatever that could go across state lines at that time when the FBI was being put together. And it was the same. It's the same in Europe. There is no team that can do this. And this was sort of his inspiration.
So there's the start of this. So I think it was the first episode. I don't remember. But there's a killer in, you know, France, and then he moves to another, maybe Italy or someplace. And so this team can actually track and go across.
Yeah, because, you know, like the police in Ireland would never talk to the police in England. The police in England would never talk.
That's crazy.
And never, they'd never link one single murder. You know, it'd be very difficult.
Interesting.
So that's,
interesting.
That's what this team does.
Yeah.
And by the way, I don't even think we've mentioned. Maybe we did, but Donald Sutherland. My God, you have a guy with that kind of gravitas on a show. All of a sudden, it makes you go, it must be good.
Don Aldino. Yeah, he was great. He was very, very a lot
of
fun.
He goes by Donald Dino.
He does to me. He calls me something much ruder. But
Richard Flood is in studio with us. The show is called Crossing Lines. It airs on Sunday nights on NBC at 10. And by the way, look at this guy's commitment to the role, Kevin, that he still is keeping that phony Irish accent, even though he's in doing publicity for the show. He's pretending like he sounds like Tommy.
He can't let it drop.
We'll take a break. Come back more with our guest after this on the Kevin DeBeach on K-Rock.
Richard Flood is in our studios.
Hello.
Talking about Crossing Lines, a show which, let's talk about the production of this show. I've never heard of this type of cooperation between, it seems like 17 different people are putting it together.
Apparently we're the first of its kind. It's actually ever been done like this. So it's, our main producers are called Tandem in their German company, and they put it together along with TF1 and a couple of other people, I think, but they're the two main people. And they, we made the show, and we shot 10 episodes straight away without
10.
Yeah, without having really sold it anywhere. And now, then it came and it NBC bought it.
NBC bought the 10 episodes for here.
Yeah,
and then is it showing in other places around the world?
Yeah, I think it's apparently in about 140 countries.
Only 140.
Only 140.
Just that.
Yeah, all right. Sony AXN are our big distributor, I think, kind of in main international markets, and then around Europe.
Are they showing in Ireland? So your family?
It's not actually in Ireland yet.
All right.
I'm not sure when it's in Ireland. But that's actually...
Irish guy, but they don't bother to go to Ireland.
It's actually okay for me, because if I go home, you start getting a lot of abuse.
Richard Flood in studio. Again, we're talking about Crossing Lines, Sunday nights at 10 on NBC. You play an Irish detective on the program. Kevin mentioned earlier that everybody in the group has a specialty. What is yours? What are you good at?
Tommy McConnell's specialty is he's a specialist in weapons and tactics.
Yeah. Okay, and what did you have to learn as an actor? Like, what was your intensive training to be able to look good on camera?
Right, a few things, because he's a bare-knuckle boxer as well. So I had to do quite a bit of physical training and a lot of boxing training with a guy called Tomáš Petrač in Prague, where we shot.
Wow, he sounds serious.
Yeah, no kidding.
European kickboxing champion and not someone you mess with.
Really?
So he was
did
great.
Kick your ass, or was he cool to train?
He was really sweet with me, but... the odd time he'd be demonstrating something and he'd hit me inadvertently and he'd nearly knock me on my ass.
But, he's the real deal.
He was some tough guy.
And you're also a gun specialist, right? You can shoot. Can you really shoot with either hand?
Not quite. I'm not a bad shot though. I'm actually quite accurate. But I had to do a lot of gun training and just different guns and right and left handed, so you don't look stupid.
Right.
And then tactics like entering rooms and clearing rooms and managing crowds, all that kind of thing. Yeah. So, but
now,
it was really good fun.
You're between seasons right now.
Yeah.
Have you let yourself go a little bit from whatever physical shape you need to be in when you're filming?
If by that you mean he's thinner than he is in the show, yes. you know what I mean? Like you had to bulk up a little, didn't you?
Yeah, no, I would have lost a bit of weight. You know, that kind of physique is only really good for that kind of role. It's not particularly useful otherwise.
You don't have to tell me, man. I just walk around like buff all the time. Look, I know. Yeah, I'm with you, brother. You mentioned that you actually film all over Europe, which must be one of the great perks of the job. You mentioned Prague. Where else have you shot episodes of Crossing Lines?
Yeah, we were shooting... Prague was our base. You know, we were there most of the time. We have our main studio there.
And that's a beautiful city, right?
It's stunning, yeah.
I've never been there. What's it?
It's beautiful. I mean, it's quite medieval in many ways. days, but it's on the river and it's stunning. And at Christmas, it looks like a postcard. Like, wow. It's kind of ridiculous. It's incredibly romantic.
But that Czech is an ugly language, though, right?
It's very difficult to learn. I mean,
tough.
We were there for months, and I think I can just about say hello at the end.
How are the ladies, Richard?
They were very friendly, very nice, very supportive of our show.
That's a politically correct answer.
But we also think he wants to know
if they were hot.
They're pretty beautiful bunch. Yeah.
Noted. All right. So where else did you go?
Did you say also Paris?
Yeah, we shot in Paris then for a while, which was Paris.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be something.
What are you going
to
do?
Okay, we'll go to Paris
and
then.
And then we went to the south of France, down to Nice, where we shot.
It's not really work at all.
No, not any work like I've encountered before. So it was very nice. How tough was it?
You've been in acting for a while, but how tough was this job to get? Was it an intense audition process?
It wasn't too bad, actually. I mean, I knew the casting director, Priscilla John, in the UK. I've known her for a little bit. She'd never actually cast me before, but she was certainly... I was on her radar for some reason. So they called me. I was actually in Ireland at the time. They called me to come in and just do the first audition, kind of a read, sent me the script. But as soon as I read it, I kind of felt I had a feeling for it. And a couple of friends of mine had read it as well. You know, they were kind of bringing all the Irish guys in. And they said that...
The regulars?
The regulars, yeah. But they said they kind of saw that this might be my one. So I just went in and did the first audition. And then about a week later, maybe less, they called me to go in and meet our first director, a guy called Dan Percival. I went into the audition, you know, and I'm not very good at auditions, so I was quite nervous and I really wanted to do this. So I was a bit nervous going in, but we ended up just sitting out the back having a chat for about half an hour.
I was going to ask, is that the key to getting cast to something, is just the chemistry that you have with
some of it,
whoever?
You know, I don't really know what the key is. If I knew what the key was, I'd be working.
You'd have more jobs.
You'd be Iron Man if you knew how to audition.
We just got on. We felt the same way about the character. We had similar ideas and things, and then we did the scene a few times, and it seemed to make sense, or it seemed to fit. And then about a week later, but you know, it has to go then back to all the producers and everything. But about a week later, then they rang me to invite
Fantastic.
Me.
Fantastic. That's pretty cool.
So it wasn't too bad.
Bean mentioned working with Donald Sutherland. He's a legend here. I mean, we've seen him in everything.
He's a legend.
Our whole lives.
Yeah.
What's that like working across from him?
Initially, it's kind of daunting. You know, you're kind of there going, Jesus, Donald Sutherland. What am I doing here?
Who doesn't fit?
Yeah.
One of these is not like the others.
Exactly. But he was great with us. I mean, he's very sweet and very, very funny. And he really, you know, he puts everybody at ease, and he says he's just as nervous as everybody else. And eventually after...
He's not, but he says that.
Well, I don't know. You know, maybe he is. I'd like to take him at his word that he is, but it makes me feel better. But after, you know, the first take or whatever, you're banging there and you're just kind of doing it.
He's just a colleague.
Yeah, he operates like that.
William Fichtner? He is amazing.
Bill is, he's great. And again, you know, I had my very first scene... was a scene with him, and I was kind of nervous. First day, first scene, the first morning.
And you were giving him a lot. The scene is you giving him a lot of crap.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I'm right in his face.
Right.
And it was actually one of the scenes we did for the audition. And I always hate shooting the scene that you did for the audition, because it's kind of already, it's in your head or something, and you remember the audition, and that's a horrible experience, and you're having to do it again. And that was the very first scene, so I was a bit nervous at the start of that. But Bill again was just made it very easy, you know. Give it to me, and we just went.
That was a cool moment at the beginning, because the guy who runs this whole group brings in a bunch of strange people. No one knows anyone, basically.
Yeah. Nobody knows anybody, and there's a few.
Yeah, you just plopped down problems. And said, "All right, be a team." Exactly.
Yeah. So a few teething problems.
We're about out of time. Crossing Lines Sunday nights at 10 on NBC. It's a very competitive evening of television in America. And how is it doing? Is it looking? Are you encouraged about the way it's doing in the U.S. And will it be picked up for season two here?
I think I'm not sure. You know, those kind of things are a bit above my head.
I love that show.
Pay too much attention to that kind of thing. But people see, everybody I've talked to seems to be responding pretty well to it.
So. Have we talked about Gabriella yet or no?
I
can't remember.
Does she ask about Kevin, like on set?
That's a great question.
Say, do you know Kevin?
I'm going to text her because I must tell her that I was in on this show this morning, and I'm sure she'll be very excited.
Now being actively mocked. I like it. I like it.
So your job, Richard, we've done our part. We had John and we promoted your little show. Okay, your job is now to go back to your little show and get Gabriella in here as well. Okay,
no problem. We'll
make it happen. All right, Sunday nights at 10 on NBC. The show is Crossing Lines. Thanks so much for the time. We enjoyed it.
Take care, guys.
And now it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
And I would never have recognized his face had I not seen this Crossing Lines. Like, I mean, I recognize his face, but not the name. I didn't know his name. Fichtner.
That was A Moment with Kevin.
Wait, what?
So you would recognize him? Or if you,
I didn't.
You didn't recognize
him? Before, I didn't.
I've seen his face, but you didn't?
I've seen him a lot before this show.
But you wouldn't recognize his face.
But I didn't know his name.
Oh, his name.
Is what I meant.
And then you said his name that you knew.
Right now.
Now.
Because of Crossing Lines.
Right.
But I've seen him in a lot of other stuff, but I didn't know his name is what I meant to say.
Ah.
It would have been better had I said it that way. No!
Can I hear that again? I'm sorry. I'm not sure.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
And I would never have recognized his face had I not seen this Crossing Lines. Like, I mean, I recognize his face, but not the name. I didn't know his name. Fichtner.
That was A Moment with Kevin.
What's wrong with you? How does that sound for a change?
Exactly. So you didn't recognize his face until you saw him on Crossing Lines.
Then you recognized him.
I'm confused.
His name.
I'm sorry.
I said that.
He doesn't know.
I don't get it.
Poorly. Fichtner.
9:40. Ralph is here. Time for our final look at the Showbiz Beat for a Thursday morning Kevin Abid show.
Shock of all shocks. Paula Deen turned down a chance to appear on Dancing with the Stars.
That is a surprise. Because there are black people on it?
Yeah. She doesn't like the black people. No, it's...
Who's her. She? She's a food channel?
She was a former Food Network star who was a host of a very popular cooking program there. She's sold a ton of cookbooks. I mean, she is sort of a big star who has been laid low by this fact that came out that years ago she referred to one of her friends, African-American friends, as the N-word. And it has just become a major thing. And she lost her job on the Food Network, and she's been sort of blackballed.
All of her sponsorships, endorsements.
So this would have been
an action. Why the ball got to be black?
This would have been a real chance for her to sort of resurge, you know, have a career resurgence by appearing on the show. Tom Bergeron said he was surprised that she didn't take it.
It seems these days like anyone would be smart to take it. It really does boost your celebrity factor a lot.
Yeah. Source close to Paul said the dance floor is not the appropriate place for her.
What does that mean? I know that's true for me, but what does that mean for her?
I think she has a wooden leg. I don't know. But we won't get to see her there. I think she could have used that. But
Betty?
Oh, come on. She lost a lot of
weight. She would have been terrible on the show, though.
Yes, but of course, she's old. Could have fallen in love with her against it. Oh, look at that sweet old Southern grandma. She's okay.
A chance to see a good side of her.
Yeah, she seems nice. Let's forgive her, shall we? And then somebody said, no! Change is over on The Mentalist. You guys watch The Mentalist?
I do. I like that
good
show.
Good show. One of my favorites on that show is Amanda Rigetti. She is the tall, statuesque
redhead.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, is she attractive.
Something, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
Leaving the show.
Oh,
that's mean.
Her and Owen Yeoman, who plays Rigsby on that show, her sometime boyfriend, both leaving the show at the end of next season. So that's sad news because I like them both. But I always thought Amanda should play Wonder Woman. You should dye her hair black and just put her in that bustier and just get her out there.
She can make that work.
She is tall and statuesque and like sturdy and just kick ass. I want her to tie me up with that magic lasso, make me tell the truth. You know what I'm saying?
No, but I think I can guess.
Amber Tamblyn, another one of our favorites. She's got a new job. She's joining the cast of 2 and a Half Men. She will star as Charlie Sheen's character's illegitimate daughter, Jenny, who's a lesbian.
Might it be time to pull the plug on that?
You're saying let's get a little thin? That show's wearing a little thin?
It might be best if you just let it go, okay?
She will be semi-replacing Angus T. Jones's character, who has been written out of the show because he said it was garbage. And, of course, her character will be the daughter of a character who's no longer on the show as well, because Ashton Kutcher has taken over for Charlie Sheen.
Hmm.
But reportedly, Amber's character will have a lot of the same characteristics as Charlie's character. She will be outspoken and sort of sarcastic and love the ladies. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Kevin, you know what I'm saying?
I do. Stop making that.
I'm just glad she's on TV again. I've missed her.
I am too, but I wish she were on a show that I would watch. Because to me, she's still not on TV because I'm not going to be watching Two and a Half Men.
Good news is we're going to be able to see Amanda Seyfried in that movie about Linda Lovelace.
Okay.
Star of Deep Throat. The movie is called Lovelace. And there was a potential a gag order on that film.
Well played.
Thank you. Or restraining order, if you will. Because the owners of the copyright of the original Deep Throat movie claim that the new film used more than the 5 minutes of footage from the film without a license or permission from the original classic film. A judge took a look at the lawsuit and said he would not order a restraining order, so the film will be released this coming weekend as expected. So
the judge did have to watch it 10 times.
He sure did. Had to watch all of Deep Throat over and over again to make sure he didn't miss anything.
But there's no gag order, though. That's what you're saying, right?
Thought I made that joke.
I've got puns and rim shots and then more puns.
And sad news. One of the original Munchkins from The Wizard of Oz has passed away.
Wait,
surely this has got to be the last one, right?
That movie was from 1939.
1939, yes. Margaret Pellegrini was her name. She passed away at the age of 89 in her home in Phoenix on Monday. She was known as the Flower Pot Munchkin because she smoked a lot of pot. No, I'm kidding.
Because that's probably that way.
She wore a flower pot on her head. She was one of those Munchkins who greeted Dorothy when she landed in Oz. There's only two Munchkins left from the original cast. Both of them are in their 90s. And this announcement makes them both very sweaty.
I did. I reached out to our friend Brad Williams this morning to express sympathy on behalf of the show for his loss.
She passed away after a short illness. Fairly, it's believed someone put her medication on the top shelf, and that's why she couldn't reach it.
Very sad times for little people.
It is very sad times. She's not only merely dead, she's really most sincerely dead.
This is a touching tribute.
Margaret Pellegrini was 89. I'm Ralph Garman.
Why would you say that? You didn't even do the birthday.
Because I was embarrassed and I wanted to get out as quickly as possible.
Well, then don't give your name. Just slink out the door and hope people don't know who it was.
Hey, speaking of embarrassing, tomorrow night at 10 p.m., Kevin Smith and I will embarrass ourselves on stage at the Improv in Hollywood on Melrose.
Nope. Kevin just called. He's not doing it now.
Come on by and see us. There'll be many more short jokes to be made about the passing of a munchkin, I promise you, in our Tinseltown Stiff section of the show. Come out and see us. You can go to BabylonRalph.com for more details or TheImprov.com. And then we're in Irvine next Friday. So if you're in OC or LA, come see us, won't you? Today's celebrity birthday is Dustin Hoffman, 76. The Edge of U2 is 52. Tom Linton of Jimmy Eat World is 38 years old today. Actress Lindsay Sloan is 36. Megan Good turns 32 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you, Ralph. Tomorrow morning, an all-new show. It's Friday morning. That means we have the movie beat.
We got half off on the coffin, by the way.
Is that right? That's good news.
Yeah, it's got a good deal.
Lake Bell will be on the show tomorrow.
What? Yes.
One of our favorites. Of course, from Children's Hospital.
Awesome.
She's in a world.
In a world.
Looks so funny.
The most expensive thing that you broke. We're going to talk to you tomorrow morning. We have a brand new internet roundup. We have tickets for Kick-Ass 2. We have Matt Damon talking about Elysium.
Awesome.
Wow.
Awesome.
And we have Ronda Rousey in studio.
What?
Wow.
At which point we're going to send Beer Mug for food.
Oh, good idea.
Come on.
He's absolutely way too excited about this.
Yes.
He is.
So he goes for food in the 9 o'clock hour, and then we have Ronda Rousey in.
I like that.
That's the way that's going to work tomorrow morning on an all-new Kevin and Bean.